Sports fans live in the moment. There's only tonight. Game night. Welcome to Sportsnet Tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Tonight on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Good evening, everybody. Roger Lajoie with you until 9 o'clock Eastern on this beautiful Saturday evening. Glad you are along with us on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'll be with you until 9 o'clock and welcome your comments, anything we're talking about. You can reach me on Twitter at TheRaj590, at TheRaj590. Our poll's up on Twitter. I'll talk about that in a second. You can email Roger at Sportsnet590.ca if you prefer, if you're not on Twitter. If you're not on Twitter, you know what? That's probably a good decision. Text 590-590 with your name and your location. 590-590, name and location as well. And if you'd like to feedback, talk about anything we're talking about, we welcome your feedback in the next couple of hours. Coming up on the show in a couple of minutes, Louis Zatzman joins us, writer at Raptors Republic, talk about the big news of the day. And it is, as Shoa Lee has been telling you on the update, Fred VanVleet re-signs with the Raptors. Sometimes your re-signings are more important than your signings. And I just heard my great friend Josh Goldberg talk about the Blue Jays, what they should be doing in signings in the offseason. A lot of excitement and George Springer and all these guys that are out there and Trevor Bauer and everything else is all great. But it's funny, sometimes the free agents you don't know are better than the free agents you do know. That was a great signing for the Raptors today. Fred VanVleet is one of the best stories in sports, folks. He's one of the best stories in sports. And if you have not had a chance to see it yet, those of you who are on your phones all day, I don't know how you possibly could have missed it. But at any rate, maybe you did because you're going back and forth with a bunch of yahoos and discussing your opinions. Get a hold of Fred VanVleet's video of the draft night party he had in 2016. So can you imagine? You have your friends all together. You're having a draft night party. You're obviously expecting to be drafted in 2016. And what happens? You don't get drafted. That is the equivalent of inviting friends to your wedding and either the bride or the groom, whatever side you're on, doesn't show up. What a horrible thing that must be. Let's have a draft night party. Oh, I didn't get drafted. Here's my wedding reception invitation. Oh, the bride didn't show. Or the groom didn't show. What could be worse? If you're Fred VanVleet, you don't shrug it off. But the video, and check the video out. It's all over the place if you haven't had an opportunity to look at it. But basically, is he acknowledging the disappointment, saying he didn't get drafted? And bet on yourself. And he tweeted today, bet on yourself. And when you bet on yourself, folks, and you believe in yourself and you do the work, and it's got to be both. It's got to be both. You can't just believe in yourself and give yourself a bunch of affirmations and say them over and over again and not do the work. Or, and this is equally the same thing in my mind, so take it forward. It's my opinion now. So here's my opinion. I work hard. Well, I bloody well hope so. I kind of take that for granted, that if you want anything in life, you're working hard. But if you don't believe in what you're doing and you don't have a passion, that's not going to work either. You got to do both. And Freddie did both. And that night of his draft, the best offer he had was something like, I don't know, 20 grand for play in the, you know, 905 league or whatever the hell the opportunity was. Because if you don't play pro basketball in the NBA, there's not much here in North America left for you that's worthwhile doing. And he fought it off, and he believed himself, and he did the work, and bingo. And full value to the Raptors for acknowledging, never mind the free agents that are out there, look after your own guys. Everyone says you have to develop of culture of winning. You have to be an organization that people want to come to. You have to be this and that. Here's how you do that. You look after your own people. And that's true whether you're in pro sports or in any other business. Never mind going to ZipRecruiter and stealing the next guy from somebody else. How about you acknowledge, develop, and look after your own people? That's what a culture of winning is. And the Raptors have it. They have one of the best organizations in sports. They have the best executive in the game in Masai Ujiri. And again, folks, this is all my opinion in case you didn't know. I'm doing a sports talk show. It's my show, so it's my opinion. But my opinion is the best executive in the game, and you develop your own people. So it's a great signing. Congratulations to Freddie. Congratulations for the Raptors. And you know what? I understand now, listening to show's updates, that they're down and they're having a chat with Serge Ibaka. I like Serge Ibaka. That's great. If Serge Ibaka, though, wants to buy into what the Raptors have got going here, great. Hope they sign him. If he doesn't, you know what? Move on then. Move on. If Marc Gasol wants a reunion at the Lakers to win the easy way with the Lakers, thank you, Mark. You were great. We loved you at the parade. Terrific job. Thanks for your contributions. Go on to the next one. Culture of winning starts here. Don't make apologies for playing for the Raptors or signing with the Raptors. You want to play with the Lakers or the Celtics or, God help you, the Knicks. Have at her. That's how the Raptors have developed a team that has won 6 or 7 division titles, 50-plus wins for a decade, the NBA championship in 2019, second-best record in the NBA this year, even though it's not the basketball market that everybody wants to play on. They're the best organization, and I feel the best about them moving forward. As I segue into my poll question at the Raj 590, which of the three Toronto sports teams, and please, Argo fans, Rock, TFC, whatever, your beer league team, I'm putting these three teams out because, without apology, they are the top teams in Toronto. Sorry. I'm sorry, but they are. They are. And I know people, like, I ask you this question. If you think TFC is in the top in Toronto sports, describe the night they won the championship as opposed to the night the Raptors won or the bat flip game against Jose Bautista. I love the TFC. I love the Argos, but I'm sticking with the big three. No apologies. Leafs, Raptors, Jays. Who's got the best future? I think that's a hell of a question tonight. Who's got the best future? We'll talk about that throughout the course of the show. Later in the hour, Alex Chippen, NFL writer at The Score. We'll talk about the NFL. Lots of great guests coming up in the program. Thanks for locking us in. Our technical director is Tom Young behind the glass. Terrific job he will do tonight. Kyle Norris, our producer, will also do a terrific job. And I'm Roger Lajoie. Both those guys make me look good. And Louis Zatzman's going to do that now as well. He's a writer at Raptors Republic. He joins us to talk about today's big signing. Louis, thanks very much for joining us and holding on. And let's talk about Fred VanVleet coming back to the Raptors. Louis, is there a negative to this signing from the Raptors' perspective?
First of all, thanks for having me, as always. And no, I don't see a negative at all. I mean, when you were talking about the culture of winning, I completely agree. And this builds that. I mean, if people want to talk about a negative, it's expensive. But the thing about it is the Raptors don't have guys getting paid this amount on the team, and you need someone getting paid this amount to trade. And that's if worst comes to worst, right? Worst comes to worst, he's a very valuable trade asset. But really, that's not something that should even be considered, because VanVleet was such an important part of winning a championship. He's made himself into this player, as you were talking about a few minutes ago. I mean, he wasn't even drafted, right? He was offered Exhibit 10 contracts, some two-way deals. He chose to go the hard way. He chose to play his way onto a team. I mean, the guy's a winner, and there's really no way this backfires for anyone.
It is a great development. There's no doubt about that. So that business is done. And of course, one of the things before you can even wax poetic about business, this day and age, Lewis, it's all about what happens next. Now, apparently, organization is meeting with Serge Ibaka. That's the next item on the list. Marc Gasol is another free agent. Conjecture is he probably goes to the Lakers. But outside of this, is this the Raptors' big thing in the free agency period of this season? It's not attractive. It's not sexy for a lot of people. But basically, this is a kind of year where they got to look after their own house before they start looking outside.
I completely agree. So Toronto wants to lurk in the background this year. So it's the same as 2016. I mean, that's a long time ago in terms of pro sports. But in 2016, the cap spiked. Guys were getting paid massive deals. You may remember Bismack Biyombo got paid, you know, $72 million, I think, over 4 years. Toronto, you know, congratulated him and let him go. But Toronto didn't give out any deals nearly of that amount. And it seems like it's the same thing 4 years later. I mean, some of the contracts given out yesterday were just absurd. Guys are making huge amounts of money. Centers who are worse than Serge Ibaka are making crazy amounts. But the fact that all those guys got their contracts yesterday kind of takes most teams off the market. And now I don't know if anyone can even offer Serge more money than Toronto for next year. Over, you know, 3 years, 4 years, yes. But for just 1 year, Toronto will be offering the most money. So I think that gives them a real leg up on any competition there for signing him.
Totally agree. Lewis Satzman is with us from Raptors Republic. I'm Roger Lajoie. Great you're with us here on the Sportsnet Radio Network here until 9 o'clock as we talk about the Raptors re-signing Fred VanVleet and what is next for the team. The organization made it quite clear that VanVleet was their number one priority. That business is done. Ibaka is also clearly a priority based on the fact that they are going to travel and meet with him and try to get him. How important is Serge Ibaka in this overall mix for the Raptors, do you think, moving forward, Lewis?
It's a good question. I mean, to answer that question, you kind of have to separate, you said the overall mix. You have to separate the mix into different time periods, right? So for next year, I think Serge Ibaka is very important, almost as important as Fred. For future years, I think his importance really drops off. I don't know if Ibaka is in the Raptors' future plans after the 2021 season, whereas Fred absolutely is, right? That's why Fred was the overall priority. So that's why I think Toronto offers Serge something like a one-year $18 million deal. Just way more than he would make elsewhere, and then just happily part ways both sides. It's an agreement they would probably discuss right now what will happen next summer as well.
We shall see. It'd be fascinating. And I guess it comes down to it, Lewis. What do you think the overall view of the Raptors is as we sit here? Now, things can change depending on what happens, and I would suggest to you if they had not gotten Fred VanVleet under contract, if he'd gone to the Knicks for max money or something, that would change it. But if things all play the way themselves out as they are hoping they do, i.e. they do get Ibaka under contract as well, is this going to be this year all about take one more roll at it and then it's a summer of Giannis? Or is there something else maybe that this organization is looking at in addition to that? And I know there's always a plan B, but is plan A what I just said?
Yeah, plan A is what you just said. I mean, 2021 is the same as 2020 in that, you know, they're hoping Siakam, Fred, OG, the young guys take steps forward. They're hoping they hit on, you know, the tertiary pieces. Terrence Davis, for example, last year, big success. Malachi Flynn, we'll see where he can step in. They're hoping he can be a big part of the future. But keep that flexibility, right? Get the young guys better. Get them more reps while Lowry ages, while Lowry stays a star, and stay flexible. So you mentioned Giannis. We're signing him the offseason before 2022. That is absolutely plan A. But, I mean, there's other options, right? So James Harden is available on the trade market. You absolutely have to believe the Raptors have made calls because they won their championship because they made calls about Kawhi Leonard, right? When things change in the league, it's the most flexible team, the team who's best able to take advantage and maintain competitiveness that is able to win as a result. And so if a guy like Kawhi, a James Harden, for example, becomes available, if the Raptors think they can get him and stay good, then that's plan A. So plan A is Giannis, but it can change absolutely as the landscape changes around them.
As the landscape changes, indeed, and we'll see what happens in the rest of the league, which I guess kind of, Lewis, is interesting because, you know, the last decade, well, not decade, but certainly 6 to 8 years in the NBA prior to the Raptors winning the championship was basically call me when the NBA final gets here, when the Warriors are playing LeBron James team in the Eastern Conference final. And let's face that, but it was at least 6 years. We had of that. That changed, of course, with LeBron moving west. The Raptors took advantage in that year of 2019. Now we see the Lakers, and if Davis resigns with the Lakers as expected, they're certainly going to be the prohibitive favorites again. But now the East is more interesting. It's more competitive. It is much better. There's no question that the Eastern Conference team, as the Miami Heat showed, the Lakers can compete. What is the landscape, do you think, overall, heading into this NBA season? I guess a lot of it has to do with Giannis, but presuming he starts the year and finishes the year in Milwaukee, and you look at what happened the rest of the league, where do you think the Raptors fit in that mix?
Yeah, parity has to be the key word. I mean, you mentioned the Cavs and the Warriors playing each other just over and over and over again. I mean, it wasn't fun for a diehard fan who wanted to see parity, but the viewership numbers skyrocketed. And so now the NBA, for people who are already watching, like yourself, I mean, it's super fun when there's parity, right? Like last year, people in Toronto might have said the Raptors were, or 2 years ago, people in Toronto might have said the Raptors had a chance, but outside of the market, they weren't a prohibitive favorite. And the same with the Lakers last year. I mean, people thought Philadelphia, Milwaukee, the Clippers, nobody knew who was going to win the championship last year. And it's the same this upcoming year. You mentioned Milwaukee, they will absolutely be a contender. Philadelphia really retooled, added a lot of shooting around Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons. I mean, the Clippers still have Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. Portland has had an unbelievable offseason. There's just so many teams you have to name, but none of them have taken such huge steps forward that the Raptors are out of the mix. I mean, they were close last year. They lost in seven to a really good Boston team. I think they would have really competed with Miami or LA if they'd gone to either series. And they're no worse this year. And neither is the competition better. So if you think that the Raptors were a competitor last year for the championship, it's absolutely the same thing again this year. And that's all because of the parity. It's allowed because the league has just introduced unpredictability back into the game.
Is there anybody out there that could add to this mix, given the fact, as we've already discussed, even if they do get Ibaka under contract, and the fact that Freddie Van Vliet, Michael Grange brought up a great point earlier today in terms of Freddie's contract and giving them a bit of a break, taking some more upfront money than the contract actually goes down because of the summer of Giannis, giving them that flexibility. But even with that in play, is there any flexibility, anything they can do if they do resign Ibaka to add? Are there some free agents out there? Do you think in this mix it might look good here, even if it's on a one-year deal?
Yes, they still have the full mid-level exception, about $9 million, which is enough to get a pretty good player. I mean, last year they used most of that on Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, who was really good for the team. Not a star, but quite good. And this year, there's some guys who could fill the same role. So Harry Giles is a center lots of Raptors writers and fans are aching for. I mean, Sacramento can't bring him back just by virtue of their cap space. And he's a really good passer, solid defender. He could take some center minutes for Toronto. I also think another Sacramento guy, Rashawn Holmes, if he's available on the trade market, now he's not a free agent, but you could buy him cheap, he could play a ton of center minutes for Toronto if, say, Ibaka or Gasol, one of them, doesn't come back. Chris Dunn already signed with Atlanta. He's a guy I was really looking at. But there's tons of options out there. Harry Giles, though, I think is the one that would improve the team the most.
Interesting. Lewis Zatzman is with us from Raptors Republic. I'm Roger Lajoie. The Raptors take care of their top priority in the offseason in signing Fred Van Vliet to a 4-year, $85 million contract. Today, Lewis, one more before we let you go. How active do you think this NBA offseason is going to be? There's no question there's been a lot of movement today and free agency has started and the season's supposed to start on December 22nd. But there are still so many question marks and so many different ways of so many facets of the NBA season. Are there going to be some players maybe looking for deals a little closer to December 22nd than might normally be the case? Or is it a case the NBA is just going to go about its business, period?
Yeah, it usually dies down after the first few days. I mean, often those dominoes just knock each other over all right away, and the trades are out of the way. So, I mean, there's some dominoes left, right? Bogdan Bogdanovich still needs to find a home after the trade fell through that was trying to send him to Milwaukee. John Collins in Atlanta is a really strong young player, and they just signed a bunch of guys to play his same position. So who knows if he might be on the move. Russell Westbrook, John Wall, James Harden, three quite good players on huge deals who have asked to play elsewhere. So there's things to watch, but whether those happen in the next month, doubtful, right? That could happen anytime before the trade deadline, at least the trades. So, no, I think probably things have died down. Doesn't mean something crazy might happen a month from now or 2 months from now, but probably all of the fireworks trades that you see in the beginning of the offseason will be behind us, I expect.
We shall see. Raptors take care of business getting Fred VanVleet under the big contract today. Lewis Satzman is with Raptors Republic, joins us here on Sportsnet tonight. Lewis, great to have you on the show. Thank you.
As always, a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Lewis Satzman joining us from Raptors Republic. I'm Roger Lajoie. Your thoughts are welcome. And our topic tonight and our poll question, I'll leave it up for the whole weekend because I think it's a good question and I think we'll get some good feedback on this. And we've already got it and we'll read it before the top of the hour. And what it comes down to is this. So here we are in Toronto sports, and we're in this middle zone here on November the 21st. The NBA doesn't start again until December 22nd. The NHL, not until the new year, and then who knows when into the new year. And the Blue Jays hoping for a normal season in April. So a good time on this weekend in November, late November, to ask you, of those three Toronto sports teams, Leafs, Jays, Raptors, which one do you feel most positive about moving forward? Who's got the best chance of success in the next couple of years? The Blue Jays are certainly well positioned in terms of the younger players and on the up curve. The Leafs have a great core of young players still. They have not broken through in the playoffs, but there is a nucleus there. There's no question about that. And adding Joe Thornton, a degree of optimism over this year and years beyond. And the Raptors, who re-signed Fred VanVleet, who have been a premier team in the NBA, and with the summer of Giannis coming up and other big free agents, it's a tough call. It's an interesting call. And if you're a Toronto sports fan, it's a positive call because it really shows how far these teams have come. You could make a case for all three. You really could, and the vote is almost divided, and we'll get into updating the poll in a second. So your calls, your thoughts and your comments are welcome on Twitter at TheRoj590, text 590-590, email Roger at Sportsnet590.ca. We'll get to them shortly. Which of the three is best? And I don't vote my own poll, but if I did, and I like the position of all three of them, I take the Raptors. And I take the Raptors because that's how much faith I have in Masai Ujiri, who I believe is by far the best executive in Toronto sports at this moment that has been for quite some time. And let's see how long he sticks around and does it. And if MLSC ups him and gives him a small ownership stake and gives him the keys to the vehicle, he could be the best of all time. That's the difference maker to me, is my faith in him. I think the Jays have better young talent. I think the Jays may have more of an uptick. I think the Leafs are more built for now, and certainly at some point you think they might break through in the playoffs. But it's the Raptors with their front office that has me most excited, and I think they showed it today in re-signing Fred VanVleet. But your comments at the Rog 590, email Roger at Sportsnet590.ca, text 590-590. Big week in the NFL coming up. We'll recap or preview that coming up shortly here till 9 o'clock. plenty to come. Thanks for locking us in. You're listening to Sportsnet Tonight. I'm Roger Lajoie on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Tonight, Sportsnet Radio Network, Roger Lajoie with you here until 9 o'clock Eastern. Great to be with you. Lots of feedback coming in on our poll question today, which is great. Almost 500 votes in. That's great, too. As we ask you, and I'll keep it up for tomorrow's show. I'm with you again tomorrow between 4 and 8. So no point in two questions this weekend. I think this one suffices because I'd like to hear what even the audience tomorrow has to say. Which of these Toronto sports teams, and please, again, it's where I get the TFC and the Argo fans and the Rock and everybody else. I fully acknowledge, first of all, you only get four options on Twitter to do the poll, as though any of you have done a poll knows. So if you only have four options, I'm not going to put eight for the rest of it. And secondly, I'm a big fan of the CFL. I'm a big fan of TFC. TFC has done a fantastic job. But I use the Raptors, Blue Jays, Leafs, because they are the primary teams in Toronto. And for those of you who insist they're not, take a breath for a second. TFC fans in particular, and I just told you, I love it. And they've done a great job. And they've done inroads in the marketplace. And they won the championship. And they're a contending team again. And it's all good and it's great. But let's compare the Raptors parade with TFC's. Okay? I'm not making an editorial opinion in terms of what people are into. And that does not diminish anything TFC has done, but we're doing a general interest sports talk show, so I'm going with the big three. Raptors, Blue Jays, Leafs. Which of these Toronto teams do you feel will be the most successful, achieve the most in the next few years? Raptors, Blue Jays, Leafs. It's a tight poll, and I'm not surprised. 44.4% of you say Blue Jays. 28.6% say Raptors, 27% say Leafs, and that's almost 500 votes. So that shows you the splitness of this. And that's great because it shows you that all three teams are at a point where you could make a solid argument that their futures are bright. And I would suggest to you that all three of those Toronto sports teams and TFC as well, futures are very bright. But I would still pick Raptors only because I still see Masai Ujiri as being such a vastly superior executive to the others. And that's no disrespect to Atkins and Shapiro or to Brendan Shanahan, Kyle Dubas and company with MLSE and the Leafs. That, I think, is a difference maker. Vote in at the Rog 590. Email Roger at sportsnet590.ca. Text 590-590, name and location. We'll read all your comments on that throughout the course of the show, and great to get your feedbacks. All right, week 11 of the NFL kicks off. It was a fun matchup, no doubt, between Russell Wilson and Kyler Murray to start the week, and an interesting Sunday coming up. Alex Chippen, his NFL writer at The Score, joins us now to chat about. Alex, thanks very much for joining the show, and let's review before we look ahead. Kyler Murray and Russell Wilson were lots of fun, but end of the day, the Seahawks were just a little bit better. Talk about where you see those two teams with their great quarterbacks, and although Russell Wilson isn't as young as Kyler Murray, and their chances in the NFC moving forward here. That was a great game.
Yeah, no doubt. I would say for Seattle, the issue with them all season is just going to be their defense. You know, the one thing that the Seahawks do have is they have some standout players, whether it's Bobby Wagner, Jamal Adams, even Carlos Dunlap, who they acquired from the Bengals before the trade deadline. They have splash play type of players, but their defense structurally is really bad. So teams are going to march up and down the field on them all season long. The question is, can they create enough fumbles? Can they force enough sacks? Can they produce enough interceptions? If they do those things, if they take the ball away, then they're going to have a chance. It's just really hard to rely on that because if you face teams that are really secure with the ball, and are really smart teams, you know, and you're facing good quarterbacks, it's just hard to take the ball away. So that's going to be their Achilles heel all year. Their offense is perfectly fine, and we saw that against Arizona. Russell Wilson for the first time in a few weeks, didn't have a turnover, which was really nice to see. So Seattle's, you know, a contender, but it's just hard to see them, you know, going all the way through the playoffs without encountering a team that can really take advantage of their porous defense. As for Arizona, like, this is a very intriguing team. I was actually quite high on them coming into the year after the DeAndre Hopkins trade. We're kind of seeing Kyler Murray, like, grow before our eyes. I think he didn't really have his best game against the Seahawks on Thursday night. I think a large part of that was probably because of the shoulder injury he picked up early in that game. Wasn't really taking shots downfield. But when you kind of, like, look at all the ingredients on Arizona, they kind of do a little bit of everything. They can create big plays in the run game. They can create big plays in the pass game. They have, you know, possession receivers. And, you know, as great as DeAndre Hopkins is, really he's at this stage more of like a slant and curl type of receiver. And defensively, you know, they have some holes, but they're kind of okay. Like, they're kind of hanging on. So to me, like, Arizona is the team that has a better chance to go deep into the playoffs, which is kind of absurd to think considering where they've been the last couple of years. But, you know, there's no doubt both teams will have a say in kind of how the NFC all shakes out, because I think both teams are valid playoff teams.
Interesting. Well, you talk about how the NFC all plays itself out. A couple of teams then to talk about where they sit in this mix. The New Orleans Saints got some bad news about Drew Brees. I think the timeline of his injury is optimistic, unless Alex, I didn't get the whole report on the injury, but if it's like ribs and the nature of the injury that Drew Brees is facing, it could be quite a while. But then you look and you realize the Saints were 5-0 without him last year, and they know how to win games without Drew Brees as a quarterback. And one of the reasons is a way that Hill comes in as a backup and can be used as a massive weapon, not just throwing the ball. And of course, they had Winston as their quarterback in waiting and all perfect. Yet the decision, now that Brees is out, is to start Hill. Are you surprised with that? And do you think the Saints can do well? I was going to say survive without Drew Brees, but considering how well they played without him last year, they may be just as well off with him as without him, as weird as that might sound at this stage of his career.
Yeah, so there's so much going on with the Saints right now. Like, the first thing that stands out to me is they're actually playing a lot better now than they were at the beginning of the season. You know, early in the season, like, we all kind of looked at the Saints and we were like, you know, what's going on with this team? Like, the defense has really regressed. Like, Marshawn Lattimore was really, like, horrible to start the year. He's played a lot better lately. Like, the defense has come around. The offense is going through Alvin Kamara more than ever. But he's a guy that can handle that load. So, you know, first and foremost, like, the Saints are playing well. And so whoever the quarterback is, it's going to benefit that person, you know, because it's not like Drew Brees was throwing the ball all over the yard. Like, he's really become a little bit of what you would call a check down Charlie, a guy that's really just going to throw 5 yards and let his receivers do all the work after that. Was I surprised about Taysom Hill? I was mildly surprised. But here's the thing. The Saints have to figure out what life after Drew Brees is going to look like. I think it's very possible that he retires after this year when you look at his recent injuries and just his arm strength just continues to decline. And so the Saints have to figure out, is Taysom Hill capable of leading this franchise into the future? He's signed for one more year after this. He's made it clear that he wants to be a quarterback. Sean Payton has been talking him up all the way, you know, since the Super Bowl last year when he was asked about the Bridgewater Hill Breeze situation. So we know that the Saints are high on Taysom Hill. And the thing is, it's not like Jameis Winston is good. I know everybody wants to just, you know, assume that Jameis Winston has the ability to stop turning the ball over and just become this really efficient downfield passer. And like, he's had 5 years to stop turning the ball over and he was not able to do it. So I don't know why, you know, there's this assumption that he would be able to do it with the Saints. So I think, you know, Sean Payton and the Saints are looking at it like, hey, we have to figure out if Taysom Hill is our future and if it's between him and Jameis Winston, a guy that, you know, we don't really believe to necessarily be all that great anyways, we might as well, you know, pick the wild card in Taysom Hill and see what he's got. So I was a little bit surprised just because, you know, Taysom Hill just really has not thrown the ball in the NFL a whole lot and he's 30 years old. But at the same time, you know, when Jameis Winston is your alternative, I don't think it's really all that, you know, I don't think it's stunning that they would give Taysom Hill a shot. And with Brees likely to be out quite a while. You know, if Hill doesn't play well, they can always switch to Winston afterwards.
Yes, there's always an opportunity to reverse that decision. It will be interesting, but it is Hill that gets a start against the Atlanta Falcons tomorrow. We'll see how that all shakes down. Alex, of course, we follow the Buffalo Bills, the closest of all NFL teams here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network. And speaking of Arizona, they had that heartbreaking, crunching Hail Mary loss to the Cardinals. However, things have gone pretty well for the Bills. And now, though, the flip side is they're not looking at New England anymore in that division. It's the Miami Dolphins they're looking at in that division. They have found a way to win five straight games. They are not dominating, but they're winning football games. Do they represent the biggest threat to the Bills in that division right now, especially considering that those two teams will meet in the final week of the regular season, even more so than New England, who, of course, without Brady, have struggled all year, but have won a couple of games to get to 4-5?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, to me, the Dolphins are actually the best team in the AFC East, and I've kind of thought that for a couple of weeks now. Like, when you consider the fact that for 2 years in a row, the Dolphins looked really bad at the beginning of the season, and they've just steadily improved, I think we're ready to say that Brian Flores knows what he's doing as a head coach. I think even the fact that he made the quarterback change to go with Tua, during their bye week, when the Dolphins had won a few games with Ryan Fitzpatrick, just shows you that there was clearly a plan. And a lot of teams don't have plans. They kind of just react to, you know, the weather outside or what the fans are saying in terms of when they throw a rookie quarterback in there. Brian Flores was very deliberate. I think that bodes very well for Miami. They've been feasting defensively on takeaways, which is, you know, nice to see. Brian Flores is a defensive coach, and that unit has made a lot of progress this year. And then Tua just gives them a dimension that, like, not only Brian Fitzpatrick wasn't giving them, but a lot of quarterbacks in the NFL just can't give a team, because he's so mobile, he's so elusive, he's a really good downfield passer, he's just really good. This is why Tua was talked about as a generational prospect before the draft, and if not for the hip injury that really set him back last year, he probably would have been the number one overall pick. And to me, like, Miami is the most solid team. When you watch them every week, they don't have necessarily the biggest names or you know, a lot of stars on their team, but they're just solid. Like, they move the ball up and down the field, you know, relatively consistently. They don't turn the ball over very much. Their defense produces big plays. They're a good team, and their point differential is, I think it's like plus 69, which is by far the best in the AFC East. I think Buffalo, you know, they have a lot of combustibility because they don't run the ball well. They don't stop the run particularly well. Their defense has just kind of been, you know, up and down throughout the year and has some holes in it. Like, I think Miami's a way more fundamentally sound team. I like Miami a lot.
What about Buffalo's defensive woes after just one season removed from being one of the top defenses in the NFL in the minds of many to now being absolutely dependent on Allen's passing ability year over year? What's happened in Buffalo is kind of astounding, is it not, Alex?
Yeah, it is. I would say, like, they lost two defensive tackles before the season. They lost Jordan Phillips, who was a free agent. He went to the Arizona Cardinals. Then they lost Star Lotulelei, who was really their best run stuffer, and he opted out before the season because of COVID-19. And they really missed those two guys. And Ed Oliver, who was their first-round pick last year, hasn't really taken the step that I think the Bills kind of envisioned. And so, you know, we're seeing the results of it, where their defense suddenly has it's pretty gashable. And then even like in the secondary, Tre'Davious White, I mean, he's still a really good player, but he hasn't played at the all-pro level that he was at last year. You know, Josh Norman at this stage of his career is you know, a guy that opposing quarterbacks are going to look to attack. Levi Wallace, kind of the same thing. So, the Bills have never had like a lot of stars on their defense. They've just played really well together. And, you know, that's a great quality. The problem is when you lose a few of those pieces, there's a lot of potential for sudden fall off because you don't necessarily have like a Myles Garrett, coming off the edge who can just pretty much guarantee you not just a sack, but like just complete disruption every single weekend. They don't have, Tre'Davious White played really well last year, as I mentioned, but they don't, really have like that total shutdown corner who can just take a top receiver out of the game completely. So when you don't have those things, you know, you're going to have potential for some combustibility, and that's exactly what we're seeing this year.
And finally, Alex, before we let you go, the Pittsburgh Steelers enter this weekend taking on Jacksonville, a 1-8 team with the best record in the NFL, the only unblemished record in the NFL at 9-0. Does it surprise you that they have been able to find a way to win 9 weeks in a row, which is phenomenally difficult to do in the NFL? I think people expected good things from the Steelers this year with Ben Roethlisberger back in the lineup, but I don't think anybody saw this run of an unbeaten season this deep into the season, or did they?
Yeah, I would agree with you. Like, I've been pretty surprised that they've gotten to 9-0. I think we all expected Pittsburgh to kind of, you know, rise back up the standings a little bit, and certainly be a playoff team. But to be 9-0 is pretty remarkable, considering we didn't even know what Ben Roethlisberger was going to look like coming off elbow surgery. And he doesn't really look like he's lost anything from his game. You know, they've got a really deep receiving core, and Chase Claypool has, you know, the rookie has really complemented what they do over there, and a huge target. He's already got 9 touchdowns, which is just astounding. You know, their defense was one of the best units in the league last year. So they've kind of returned intact, and they're playing up to the level. You know, the one bugaboo for Pittsburgh has been slow starts, and that's something that Mike Tomlin, I know, has stressed the last few weeks, and talking about how they can't afford to spot teams' leads. I mean, they were down against the Cowboys for most of the game a couple weeks ago. But, you know, at the end of the day, they're 9-0. And like you said, I don't know that anybody expected them you know, to just kind of like roll through the league as easily as they have. I mean, they had a signature win against Baltimore very recently. Like, they just look really good. I still think like they're certainly beatable. And I think Ben Roethlisberger, as well as he's played, he's just his style. He's a natural gunslinger, and that's always going to come with the pros and cons. You know, you never know when the fatal interception is coming or when the 3-interception game is coming, but for the most part, he's been able to avoid that. He's played well, and the Steelers just look really sound right now. They're running it, they're throwing it, and they're playing great defense, and their special teams has been good too. When you do all those things, you're going to win most weeks.
We shall see, and they are winning all these weeks so far, and they're going to try to go to 10-0 this week. Alex Chippen is NFL writer at The Score, joining us to talk about week 11 of the NFL season. Of course, the crunch of the games coming again tomorrow. Alex, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Great to be with you.
Thank you. Alex Chippen joining us from The Score. I'm Roger Lajoie. Great to have him, and great to have you at the Rog 590 on Twitter. Email roger at sportsnet590.ca. Text 590-590. We'll get your comments and reaction to our poll today. Toronto sports teams have come a long way. Raptors won the NBA title in 2019. Jays made the playoffs. Leafs made what we kind of made the playoffs in that wonky bubble season. They did and they didn't made the playoffs. But all three teams are in very good shape. My question to you is, which team has the best chance to achieve good things in the next couple of years? That's a poll on Twitter. We'll update it, and we'll read your comments in moments. As Sportsnet Tonight continues, I'm Roger Lajoie on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Sportsnet Tonight, Sportsnet Radio Network. Roger Lajoie with you here until 9 o'clock Eastern. Let's check our Twitter poll. 500 votes in. Much appreciated. We're going to keep it up all weekend because I'm going to join you again tomorrow between 4 and 8. And this merits a couple of days here of discussion, I think, because as we sit here, and look, it's another dark Saturday night, unfortunately. No NBA, no NHL, no MLB, NFL is Sunday. There's still stuff going on. I know TFC's got a game Tuesday. There's sports on. I get it. However, with those three teams idle for the moment, Raptors, Blue Jays, Leafs, which of the three do you think will achieve the most in the next few years? 44.6% say Blue Jays. 29.4% say Raptors. 26% say Leafs. Philip tweets in at the Rog 590 and says, I'm going with the Blue Jays, and truly, hashtag first world problems. Philip, you're right. But isn't that the beauty of sports? We can talk about stuff like this the rest of the world. Eh? The Gong Show, south of the border in the United States, coronavirus, global climate change, all the things. We can come in here, we can talk sports, and we can discuss this. I love it. It's great. We can go back to the rest of the stuff the other 21 hours of the day. How's that for a deal? Thanks, Phil. The Proud Rebel tweets in, the Jays have the greatest potential for long-term success with the young guys and prospects they can use as trade bait. Thank you. Rich tweets in, so hard to say, but at the same time, it's so great to be having this conversation. A few years ago, this was a laughable question. Rich, thank you. You're right. Tiny Sugar Socks, nice handle, says, I was optimistic and went for the Blue Jays. Thank you, sir. L. Ryan says, the Raptors already did. Indeed, they did, L. There's no doubt about that. Paul gives his love to TFC. Clearly, it's TFC. Christian tweets in and says, Jays. BAG says, TFC. A couple other people want to know where TFC is. And as I mentioned, not to belabor the point, I'm talking about those three teams because they are the biggest three teams in Toronto. And if you want to argue that again, I go back. TFC Parade versus the Raptors Parade. I don't want to belabor that point, but good for TFC. And listen, we'll talk about them a lot coming up. They've got a chance at running it back again with another championship, getting to another MLS championship. So good on them. And here's hoping they do. But the question are on those three tonight. Email Roger at sportsnet590.ca. Daniel says, good day, Roger. Cheers from Melbourne, Australia. Of the three major teams, I'm going with the Jays. I hope they can sign DJ from the Yanks or Springer. As far as pitching goes, I'm hoping for a reunion with Happ and Walker, or maybe bring back Galvis for a year and try for a Lindor deal next year. Love the show and listening to your comments. Cheers, Daniel, and thank you very much. Much appreciated and glad you are listening and enjoying the show down under, and you stay safe. And, well, Brian emails in, happily, this is a tough question. I say this as I think the three are all headed in the right direction. In terms of championship teams, parade-type celebrations, the Jays have the advantage of being the closest. They are entering the second in terms of championship. They are entering the second year, pardon me, of a 3 to 5 year rebuild, excluding the 2020 campaign. I think we'll see some of the names talked about coming to Toronto via free agency, along with some not mentioned landing here via trades and free agency, and mentions a few. Brian, thank you. The optimism around the Jays is very high, and I think it's warranted. I don't think there's any question when they have that nucleus. I'd rather wait until, let's put it this way. Somebody was asking me, you know, hey, Roger, what's your opinion on the Jays offseason? Soon as the Jays do something major in the offseason, I'll give you my opinion. But I'm not going to offer an opinion on DJ LeMahieu or George Springer until DJ or George Springer sign here. And if they don't, it's just speculation. It's just talk. And although they did sign Ryu last year, that kind of an off-season move would run counter to what we've seen from this management in the past. So I'm really having a hard time getting around why everybody is so wildly expecting that that's going to change. Let me make it clear. I hope it does. I think Toronto should operate like a big market team. I would love some big free agent signings. But it's amazing how optimistic, and I guess it comes from the front office themselves. I mean, you know, Shapiro and Atkins made it clear, yeah, they want to be players and they want to be in on these guys. So we'll see. We'll see. And I'll leave it at that for now. Your thoughts are welcome. Text, we got a lot of text. I'll read the text later. I want to give them enough time. 590, 590. Name and location if you're texting, please. 590, 590. We'll read them, I promise you, early in our next hour. And speaking of that next hour, a fine guest is coming up. John Hovind is a host at SiriusXM. And of the kings of the podcast, we'll talk to him about the NHL. They really going to start January 1st? Here's my answer. No way. However, are they going to start in January? It appears so, unless there's going to be problems between the teams and the players. And what really happened with the owners there? And what kind of a move was that they made the other day? And Caitlin McGrath will talk about those Blue Jays that you are all so wildly optimistic about coming up. All that is next. It is Sportsnet tonight. I'm Roger Lajoie. This is a Sportsnet Radio Network.
If sports are the great escapism, consider this your ultimate sports asylum. This is Sportsnet tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet tonight. Sportsnet Radio Network. Roger LaJoie here until 9 o'clock Eastern. CBS Sports Radio overnight. Our great lineup of shows, including Inside the Lines in the morning. Fantasy show. Josh Goldberg has the early edition of Sportsnet today, and I'll join you for Sportsnet tonight between 4 and 8 p.m. Eastern, and I'll have the same poll up when I do the weekend shows. Quite often, I like to put a poll up and give you something to think about. We've had more than 500 votes already in the poll, but I'm going to leave it up all weekend and get your thoughts on which Toronto sports team of the three that I gave you, which is Leafs, Jays, and Raptors, has the best chance for future success in the next couple of years. And it has been a divided poll, to say the least. 44.7% pick the Blue Jays, 29.2% take the Raptors, 26% say the Leafs, 503 votes in. Keep them coming, and I love your comments as well, and we'll get your feedback. A couple I didn't get to earlier on Twitter at the Raj 590, and let's get them now. Just here for the MLB chaos, that's the handle, says Raptors can't spend this much every year for a long time. Eventually, they need to take a step back and reload. However, the Jays are poised to make noise next year, and for many years after that, I voted Jays. Thank you. I don't disagree with your optimism about the Blue Jays and them being poised to make noise next year and for many years. But in terms of the Raptors can't spending this much every year for a long time, I would kind of disagree with that because they have the flexibility to make a serious run at a major free agent for 2021-22. Obviously, Giannis is the big one that's out there. But should they choose, they have a great deal of flexibility to spend some money. And I think they've established themselves now as kind of a location. I really do. And I think two of the big factors, and it doesn't get discussed enough, in how the Raptors' perception around the rest of the league is improved, and this comes from both Serge Ibaka and Marc Gasol. Because both those, and to a certain extent, I would think Kawhi Leonard as well, to be honest with you, although he only stayed here for the year and he's only been gone one season. But Ibaka and Gasol in particular, just look at this team and gave this city a perception by the way they talked and conducted themselves while they were here, and Ibaka may very well be back, as what a great city. What a great place. Diverse, multicultural, great market, solid ownership. So many positive things. So I don't think this is necessarily the clock's ticking on the Raptors in terms of their success. I think with Masai Ujiri at the helm and Nick Nurse as head coach and what they have built and accomplished here, I think they've done more than win an NBA title. I think they've turned this franchise into a place that people want to play. We'll see if that's true in the next year or two when the next crop of free agents come. But I think the perception of Toronto as a basketball place supersedes just the one season. Thank you for the text, tweet. I appreciate it. Gordon tweets in, it's their culture. The Leafs are doing a culture reset, and the Blue Jays, who knows if they have the pitching. Gordon, thank you. Gordon, I really wonder if the Leafs are doing a culture reset. I like the Leafs' talent. I don't think there's any question. They've done a lot of good work. They've come a long way. And I guess bringing Joe Thornton in, you hope brings that extra element. I still question the word that comes to me that has stopped the Leafs is selfish. Every top Leaf player who went to contract negotiation went to long, drawn out, expensive contract negotiations and got every penny they could get. And people will say, well, they're entitled to do that. And yes, they are. But Fred Van Vliet re-signs with the Raptors. And as Michael Grange was quick to point out, and it's a great point in that signing, which is a great signing period, but especially he takes more money on the front, less moving forward, and gives the team more flexibility for the summer of Giannis. He's doing them a favor doing that. He's seeing the big picture. How can you not like that? And I don't mean it as a criticism of other teams and players who don't do that, but if you really want to win You look at the success of teams like Tampa Bay and Boston in the NHL, where their star players have left a little, not a lot, but a little money on the table and a little flexibility in order to win. And when you do that, you can accomplish, I think, great things. I have not seen that from the Maple Leafs yet, although Thornton certainly is, but it's a little different for him. You know, he's just like end of his career. He's looking for one more contract, chance to win a Stanley Cup, play for $700,000. Okay, maybe they luck out with that more than anything else. I hope it works for them, but that's why I would not put them into the top of three, but we shall see. Okay, JP in Etobicoke, now to the text line, 590-590, says, of the three teams, I believe the Blue Jays' future looks the most promising. They have tons of young guys, their core, the team built. They have some young vets like Grichuk, Hernandez, Ryu, and Ray. They are a number of exciting possibilities with this Blue Jays core. JP, thank you. Yeah, they're well-positioned, JP. I'm not going to argue that. They are well-positioned, and they do have a lot of options. And also in baseball, if any team decides to exercise their financial muscle, and the Blue Jays are certainly in a position where they could do that, if they are willing to do that, you can improve immediately in baseball. You don't have to worry about salary caps like the NHL or hoping a guy like Joe Thornton takes a discounted contract or circumvent the cap or whatever it is. You can spend your way out of problems in baseball. You cannot spend your way out of baseball. And you cannot spend your way out of problems like you can in baseball in other sports. And that's another advantage for the Blue Jays. So we shall see. Thank you. Appreciate it. Tony in Woodstock says, loving it, Rog. I agree with your three choices in the poll. Reason being, you win a Stanley Cup, a Larry O'B, or the Commissioner's Trophy. You get invited to the White House or Rideau Hall. Last time I checked, that invite isn't extended to MLS, CFL, or NLL teams. Tony in Woodstock, thank you. Tony, thank you. And listen, again, I don't want to spend a lot of time getting caught up with this, why I picked those three teams in the poll. Just to repeat myself, I love TFC. I love the CFL. I love the Argos. I love the Rock. I love amateur sports. I love the Steelheads. I'm a big OHL junior hockey fan. But when we're talking at this level about these teams and asking the general audience of Toronto sports fans who they think has the best future, it's the bigger ones. It's the same reason that Top 40 Radio plays the same 40 songs all day, because that's what people want to hear as much as they complain about it. So that is that. No disrespect to those other teams. But I appreciate it, Tony. Thank you. Stay well. Tony in the Hammer at 590-590 says, hi, my friend Raj. Wow. Flip a three-sided coin on this one. The Maple Leafs, the Blue Jays, and the Raptors all have great upside, but I predict the trending Blue Jays will go the furthest of the three because Ross and Mark have brought the Jays a long way, and more quality free agents to be signed by the Blue Jays are forthcoming. Tony, thank you. Great to hear from you. You stay safe and well. And again, Tony, I'm not disputing that, but I will repeat what I said earlier. I'm not going to take it for granted that the Blue Jays are going to sign a whole pile of free agents. There seems to be this expectation that they're either getting DJ or Springer or Trevor Bauer or both or all three. And if they do, wow, wouldn't that be great? But until they do, I'll hold the train on that in the meantime. And we shall see. Thank you, Tony. You're great. Eddie in High Park says, sign Masai and I'll feel better. I'm a longtime Leaf and Blue Jay fan. All are looking good. Eddie, thank you. You stay safe and well as well. Yeah, I don't see any reason why MLSC would not throw the kitchen sink at Masai and sign him. And I also don't see any reason why Masai would not sign with the Raptors. And I know Knicks and other people and money and everything else, but surely that's one thing that MLS he can do. Maybe they can't overbid for certain players in certain sports. There's an ain't question. If they want a guy at the top, they can afford to pay their general manager more than anybody else. Seriously? That should not be a discussion. Let me put it this way. I'm going to change my view on my belief that the Raptors are in the best shape if this organization does not re-sign him. He is the number one executive in sports these days. Wally in York says, hello, Raj. Think and thought the Leafs would be in the best position with all the talent the Raptors have in contention, but the Leafs are always disappointing me season after season. Maybe 67 was the last one ever. I was 10 years old then. Wally, thank you. I am not giving up on the Leafs, Wally. I they have done a lot of good things. Like I say, it just, I guess maybe it's the old school side of me, and maybe a lot of it has to do with the restrictive nature of the salary cap. But when I look at the Maple Leafs in the last 4 to 5 years, and the reasons they have fallen short is they have not been able to fill some of the holes they have around their core four players. And the reason they haven't is they spent too much money on their core four players. And the reason they did that is their core four players sucked every dime they could out of the contract negotiations. They did. You can agree with that, disagree with the intent of that, but that's a fact. They were all, they're, nobody's leaving a dime on the table for anybody else. However, even despite that, that's how much Kyle Dubas, Shanahan, and the crew have done a great job there, is they've left enough flexibility. And with guys like Joe Thornton coming in and making a difference, wow. You know, it'll be 100%. And we will we shall see. Pete in Toronto says the Raps, if they sign re-sign Masai, his expiry is in under a year. If they spend to the luxury tax, they never have. We shall see. Pete, thanks very much. Yeah, Raptors though have, I think, handled their team from the start to the finish in perfect shape. I really do. I really do, and I am confident they are going to give Masai the contract he needs. And he deserves it. Is 100% tremendous. All of that. Thanks for your text and your tweets. 590-590 is where you get us on text. 590-590, name and location. Email Roger at sportsnet590.ca. And you can also get us on Twitter at the Rog590. We've got some more. I'll read them in a bit. Coming up shortly, Kate McGrath to talk about the Blue Jays. We'll talk some NHL later in the hour as well. As Sportsnet Tonight continues, I'm Roger Lajoie on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Sportsnet Tonight, Saturday Night Edition. I'm Roger Lajoie here until 9 o'clock Eastern, CBS Sports Radio overnight. I'll join you again tomorrow between 4 and 8 o'clock. Marcus Fitzgerald is the host of Basketball Central on Sportsnet 650. We will talk more about the NBA free agency signings with him. One of our top interviews of the past week was Alan Walsh. He was a replay on Tim and Sid. We'll play that for you. Alan Walsh is always entertaining, NHL agent as well. We'll have that for you later in the show. But now we'll talk a little more Blue Jays baseball. Caitlin McGrath joins us, staff writer, Blue Jays writer at The Athletic. Talk about the Blue Jays and what is still in store for this team in the offseason. Caitlin, thanks for joining us. Always great to have you on the show. Hope you are safe and well. And well, let's start with the fact, Caitlin, that so many people are so convinced, positive, enthusiastic that the Blue Jays are going to go out and spend a lot of money in this offseason to add to what is already, I think we can all agree, a pretty good roster. Is that your expectation too?
A lot of money is probably relative. I don't know how much they'll actually end up spending, but I can say that they have the room to spend. So we all kind of know that they still have a pretty young roster, and when you have a young roster, it means that you don't have a very expensive roster. So they really have a lot of room, depending on what their final budget is, and that's sort of numbers that they're really never going to tell us. But the things that we've heard from Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins have continuously been, you know, ownership is going to be supportive of spending. And we saw a year ago they went out and spent $80 million to sign Hyunjin Ryu for 4 years. So obviously there is a desire there and an interest there in investing in players who cost a lot of money as long as they fit a need for the club. So, you know, everything's lining up nice for the Blue Jays. They have the need to spend on players. They probably have a good enough budget that they can achieve some of those goals that they want to achieve this offseason. It's just a matter of, at this point, negotiating, seeing what they can get done. Obviously, free agent deals are two ways. You have to have interest from the player to join the team, as well as for the player, as well as the team wanting the player. So it's all a matter of negotiating and seeing how it shakes out. But it is a good thing for the Blue Jays. I think that they are probably one of the more aggressive teams. Just one of the teams that we really know are going out there and trying to sign guys. There's probably a lot of teams that are taking a step back this offseason, but the Blue Jays are definitely pretty active out there.
Well, there might be an opportunity here, Caitlin, for them that existed, and it's not quite the same, obviously, and it's longer term if it's, you know, signing major free agents for longer dollars than it was what Alex did in 2016. But what Alex Anthopoulos really did was take advantage of a marketplace where there was like an eye of the hurricane, i.e. both the Yankees and the Red Sox were kind of taking a step back in flux. There was an opportunity there. They already had a good team in place. It was short term to bring in Price and Tulo and Ben Revere and all the moves that he made, but they saw an opportunity and they jumped on it, and it changed regardless of what their long-term plan was going to be. Now they thought was the time to do it. Like I said, even though it's different, do you think the Blue Jays might be willing to, they look at this as maybe in the grand scheme of plans, this wasn't supposed to be the offseason. Look, they lost 95 games 2 years ago. This wasn't supposed to be the offseason where you made your moves, but maybe they see an opportunity now that might not exist in another year or two?
Yeah, no, and that's a good point. And I think with managing a baseball team and being a general manager, you have to be flexible. And front offices now, they probably come up with sort of roadmaps of how they want to see their team progress through the year. So if you're at the helm of a rebuilding team, you probably have a timeline that you think is going to lead you to competitiveness. And I think that the Blue Jays are probably a little bit ahead of schedule. And it's hard to say that convincingly just because we only had a 60-game sample this year. So I think probably we have to put an asterisk beside this season or just take it with a grain of salt just because we don't know really how they would have played if there was a full season. But I do think that the Blue Jays have an opportunity to really build. I think key for them is, if they're going to go out there and sign a huge free agent, someone very impactful, I do think it has to be a multi-year deal, because I don't look at this roster as it stands right now. I don't think it's one player away, and I don't think it's 1 year away. I think there's quite a few pieces, and I think there needs to still be some development and maturity and growth from some of the young players. As you would expect, they're still very young in their career. So I don't see the Blue Jays necessarily being a World Series contender next year, assuming that they really don't make a ton of moves this offseason and shake the baseball world. But I still think they're a few years away. So I do think it's a time where they can make an impact. But I think best case for their team would be have that impact spread over a few years. So not a one-year deal or not throwing all their chips in for one trade, but building the roster more for the future and for the now.
I would agree. Caitlin McGrath with us from The Athletic. I'm Roger Lajoie. So, Caitlin, I guess another factor, too, that enters into this is the economic uncertainty. And maybe it's factor one, not just with the Blue Jays, but everybody in the industry for obvious reasons. Who knows, by April, is it going to be business back as normal in baseball? We hope so, but it may even be optimistic. But that all said, at a certain stretch of time, it is going to, things will come back to normal and they will start getting crowds again. I don't want to belabor that 2016 again, but one of the things I really noticed of that compared to any other times the Blue Jays have spent money in their franchise history is, Caitlin, almost it was instantaneous. The crowds were 25,000. Memory escapes me. I was one of the official scores. I used to track the attendance. So, but it was around that. And the moment Price and Tulo and the deals were made, it went to almost sellouts every night, which means that the marketplace here in Toronto is kind of expecting the Blue Jays to do something. And when they do, they're going to buy big time tickets. Do you think that is still a fact? And do you think that is something that this ownership is going to factor into? Because a lot of people will say, well, how can you spend money during a pandemic? But if you think you're all going to get it all back, wouldn't you be dumb not to spend the money?
Yeah, I think that that's a good point. And it's something that has come up this offseason in talking to Blue Jays front office, especially Ross Atkins. He said something along the lines of when it comes to the economic situation, the easiest way for a baseball team to be profitable again and be making money again is winning. So they know that this marketplace loves a winning baseball team. And so the philosophy then is if we want to make money, we have to build a winning baseball team. So it's, you know, it's one of those situations where you got to invest in the product if you want the product to be good, essentially. So that's kind of the philosophy, and that's what they've been saying. It's easier said than done, though, of course, right? You can say that you want to invest in the team so that it becomes a winning team, but you have to get those players here. You have to outbid other teams, probably. You have to outsway other teams. You have to make your team a desirable team. And I think the Blue Jays do have certain ingredients to do that. I think that they do have a pretty exciting young core on their team. They have a recognizable core. Obviously, the three that we always mention, Guerrero, Bichette, and Biggio, they have name recognition. So the Blue Jays do have a lot that is desirable about their club. It's just a matter of it all coming together. But I think it's going to have to start with some spending. And I think Ryu started that a little bit. They saw, the baseball world saw, the Blue Jays went out there, got one of the top pitchers on the market, made a big splash, Scott Boras client, all that. This is another year, another offseason where they can make another big splash, and then they're getting the reputation of a team that really wants to win, wants to build a winner. And that's going to have to happen a couple offseasons until it all kind of comes together.
Yeah, it's part of a process. There's no doubt about it. So they do their paperwork. The 40-man roster is set up in expectation, anticipation of the Rule 5 draft. Riley Adams, Otto Lopez, Ty Rice, those kind of players protected. Any kind of surprises there? Is that just the team looking after itself in expectation of where they're looking at? And does it give them maybe some flexibility, Caitlin, because of the youth of a lot of the guys on that 40-man roster? If they don't manage to get a big free agent, they can certainly at least try to improve the team from some of the guys on that list.
Yeah, I guess I was a little bit surprised that they added 5 spots, so they filled their roster to capacity at this point. Not to say that it stays at capacity. They can non-tender some guys coming up. They can DFA some guys. So there's ways that you can maneuver. But I was a little bit surprised they took 5. But I do think there's some uncertainty about roster sizes next year. So whether it'll be 26 or whether it'll be 28, we don't really know yet, just because we don't know what the season will look like, whether it'll be less games, a shorter schedule, all that kind of stuff. So I think the uncertainty that's hanging in the air is making there also be some thought that it could be a very active Rule 5, because people or teams, I should say, might have more roster spots. So knowing maybe that kind of thought process, I maybe can see why they added 5 guys. The interesting thing to me, I guess, is now if you look at the 40-man roster, the Blue Jays have 5 catchers on a 40-man roster, and that's a lot of catchers to have on a 40-man. So I think when I look at their catching situation, to me, I just see this is an area where they can trade from. So there's a lot of teams out there that probably want a young catcher. The Blue Jays have a couple young catchers on the roster now. In fact, all their catchers are young. So there's a lot to work with. I would not be shocked if there's going to be a trade that involves a catcher this offseason.
It has been a slow-moving offseason with a lot of reasons, and there's no question. In fact, why anybody, never mind Blue Jays, why would anybody do something quick and spend a ton of money before you have to? And we've even seen it. It's been the trend, Caitlin, in baseball even before COVID, where the offseason tends to take a little bit more time and teams are a little bit more cautious with an eye on the future, and that's even more so now. That all said, do you expect anything to change on that? Is it going to take some definitiveness of the season before we see any of these teams really get more active and busier signing free agents, i.e. some of the stuff you just mentioned, a definitive schedule number of times, although they do have a definitive schedule out, but there is no question. Nobody is 100% certain in terms of fans in the stands and everything else. Do you see this trend continuing, or is it a case of, you know what, if we do get more positive news on the vaccine and things do loosen up a little bit, because there are no question, there are a lot of teams that have spent a lot of money in the past that are sitting on their wallets right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking around and I'm a little bit jealous of some of my NBA colleagues reporting on all these free agent deals because they happen so quick and they're in such a condensed time frame that you know right away what your team is doing. It's not like that in baseball, so you kind of have to wait around and kind of be on your toes for a couple months. I think it's going to continue like that. One date that sticks out to me is the non-tender date. So obviously teams have a couple more weeks to decide whether they want to tender some arbitration-eligible guys' contracts. I think in years past, we've seen that number start to go up, so more teams are deciding to non-tender guys, and we know the economic situation in baseball. Teams are reluctant to spend big money, and they want to shop on the free agent market and get guys for cheaper deals. And so I think the non-tender date is going to be big this year. I think you're going to see probably a lot of teams non-tender guys, and that's going to create even more availability in the free agent market. So I wouldn't be surprised if some teams are kind of waiting for that to happen to see, okay, who else is also going to be available, and then maybe things will start rolling. And then I believe that December 2nd, or it's at least early December, and then you're talking about a week later getting into the winter meetings, which is when things do start to go a little bit. Last year, it was all about where Gerrit Cole was going to sign and some of those bigger free agents. And they did end up signing at the meetings, if I recall. So I think we're probably like 2-3 weeks away from things really starting to go. But at the same time, it could be slow again. So it really is tough to say in terms of just how the season will impact it. I don't know. I think that probably is a factor. So if we were talking about Toronto, one big factor for Toronto, they don't necessarily know where they're going to play next year. And that's something that is a big factor when a free agent is deciding to sign with the club, is they kind of want to know where that club's going to be located. So I think certainty would help the situation, would certainly help the team like the Blue Jays, but really, like, you know, it's just not possible right now, right? Like, we don't know what next month's going to look like. We don't know when a vaccine's going to be available. So much uncertainty. I think we're just going to have to wait out this offseason. It's going to be different. It's going to be slow. And that's just the way it's going to be.
I would agree. And here's hoping it will speed up with some good news. Much needed good news on the health front comes up. So does that then, basically on what we said, kind of make it even that much more difficult if the route the Blue Jays decide to go at least for a year is to make a deal for someone like Lindor? And that has been a major talking point for a lot of people, and that certainly would be a way to go about fixing a problem for this season. And maybe they could get him signed long-term. But again, you know, Caitlin, teams to make moves like that have to have some degree of certainty. And I really wonder in the athlete as well, if anybody wants to make a move for the case of 1 year. Although on the flip side, if you look at it, maybe a lot of people are taking the idea that, all right, 2020 was a write-off in life. 2021 might be kind of the same thing. So if there were ever a time to just make a deal for 1 year or sign anybody for 1 year, maybe the flip side is, when you look at it that way, maybe this is the time.
Yeah, I think not just with the Blue Jays. I think across baseball, you're going to see a lot of 1 year deals. And I think you're right. There's a lot of teams that there's so much uncertainty that, as you said, it could be another half season. We don't know.
Okay, looks like we got a phone connection problem there with Caitlin. We'll try to reconnect with Caitlin in a second. It's Roger Lajoie at Sportsnet tonight on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're talking with Caitlin McGrath of The Athletic about the Blue Jays and their offseason. It has been slow developing, and it continues to be slow, but that's generally speaking a nature of the beast in this game right now. And with COVID and with everything else, you've got to be careful in your planning now. Does that mean less one-year deals, more one-year deals, or no kind of deals at all and play it tight to the vest remains to be seen. I just sense this optimism here in Toronto that ownership is really going to go out and spend a ton of money ASAP as, okay, I just wonder where it's coming from. And I know the front office has said, yes, you know, we're going to be, you know, we're going to go out there and we'll spend money. So, well, how much money, how long, what kind of term on players? I guess what leads the optimism is last year's signing of Ryu, because that certainly went against the recent trend of the Blue Jays. Caitlin is back with us. Caitlin, we lost you there for a second, but basically you were talking about maybe we just see more one-year deals in baseball this year.
Yeah, sorry about that. But yeah, what I was saying is that there's so much uncertainty heading into next year that I think there's going to be players that are okay to just take the one-year deal. Maybe there's more games next year so they can kind of reset their value. And a good example of this is just what the Blue Jays did a couple weeks ago with Robbie Ray. We know that Robbie Ray has a lot of potential as a pitcher to throw strikes. He's got a great fastball, but obviously he didn't have his best season last year, with a lot of walks, and there just wasn't really enough games for him to really, you know, kind of figure it out on the mound. So he basically said that he was okay to take a one-year deal. He liked the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays liked him. So he'll go. He'll hopefully pitch more games, get more starts, and be able to have a better season so that when he goes into free agency again next offseason, hopefully he can get a long-term deal or a bigger deal, and that's ultimately what he's looking for.
And we'll see if he gets it. Finally, Caitlin, we look at, you know, and all this talk, and it's amazing. You know, there's DJ LeMahieu, there's all the other free George Springer. Trevor Bauer is one in particular, because when again, all is said and done, it comes to pitching. And when we even look at the Blue Jays and losing in the playoffs to Tampa Bay, all is said and done, it was pitching. Yet most of the talk seems to still revolve around position players with this team. Do you feel confident in where the Blue Jays pitching staff, both starters and bullpen, is now compared to last year? Is it good enough, do you think, moving forward? Because end of the day, it's still all about pitching.
I think they still need to add, and I think the pitching market this year, it's not the greatest pitching market. You know, Trevor Bauer is definitely at the top, and he's the top guy. But in terms of the other guys available, there's a lot of guys who maybe had an off year, or they had one good year, but, you know, their long-term track record isn't the greatest. Or you have a guy like James Paxton, for example, who's coming off an injured year. He's great. He's still a great pitcher, but there's just some question marks about his arm after the injury and stuff. So it's not that it's a bad free agent pitching class. It's just it's not like a slam. It's not full of slam dunks necessarily. But I do think the Blue Jays are still very good options for them. Like Tanaka's out there, Walker's out there, James Paxton, like I just said, Trevor Bauer's out there. So there's a lot of names. I'm definitely missing some. Or Jake Odorizzi is another guy. But I think the Blue Jays pitching situation is better than it was in previous seasons. I think Nate Pearson, it was good to have him have some major league experience last year, or this past season, and I think he's only going to get better. You have Ryu, he was spectacular. I think Robbie Ray probably has some untapped potential that maybe the Blue Jays can figure out. I think just overall the Blue Jays, the depth is a lot better. We saw a lot of young arms look pretty good last year, you know, different points. Thomas Hatch was good from the bullpen. They want to make sure he becomes a starter again. Anthony Kay, again, had some really good outings out of the bullpen. They want to see him be a starter again. So the depth is pretty good for the Blue Jays. I think they still need a more high-end sort of top-of-the-rotation arm, whether it's a number one or a number two that can kind of complement Ryu.
You can never have enough pitching. That's one thing that hasn't changed in baseball forever. Caitlin McGrath's fine work is at The Athletic. She is staff writer and covers the Blue Jays in particular for that fine publication, joins us on a regular basis on Sportsnet Tonight. Which we always appreciate, Caitlin. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's Caitlin McGrath from The Athletic. I'm Roger Lajoie. The optimism of the Jays is very high. There is no question about it. Many of you feel the Blue Jays are in the best position of any of the Toronto major sports teams to really have a great couple of years. Because our poll, 45.6% of you pick Blue Jays as a team that will achieve the most in the next few years, over the Raptors at 28.4% and the Leafs at 26.1%. So there's a lot of optimism, a lot of feedback and comments. We'll read them throughout the course of the show. You can feedback on Twitter at the Rog 590, at the Rog 590. Email Roger at sportsnet590.ca and text 590 590. Love your feedback on any of our topics in the show. Robert emails in and says, "Hi, Roger. In my opinion, the Raptors, over the recent period of time, have proven themselves to be the best of the Toronto teams. They've won a world championship. They've been in contention with more than 50 wins over the last 5 years or more. Further, they've demonstrated not only a winning capacity, but an approach to the game that is solid from top management on down. They have a winning base and a foundation on which they can build for the future. It's not easy to win an NBA championship, but you get the feeling in watching the Raptors, they will be in contention for years to come." Robert, thanks very much. I agree. And Robert, that's why I would pick them. Even though the Jays nucleus is great, I don't think there is any doubt that there are a lot of people who like what the Leafs have done with their nucleus. And I think all the three Toronto teams in our poll have great possibilities. But ultimately, I think the Raptors are a bigger long picture situation because of the strength of their front office and the way they do business and the winning culture they have demonstrated. And that goes beyond just a one season win. Thanks for the email. 590-590 is a text on Twitter at the Rog 590. More to come as Sportsnet Tonight continues. I'm Roger Lajoie on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Sportsnet Tonight, Sportsnet Radio Network. Roger Lajoie with you here until 9 o'clock on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Great to be along with you on Twitter at the Rog 590. Email Roger at sportsnet590.ca. Text 590-590. Your feedback, welcome. We'll read more of your feedback. Had a lot of it tonight. It's great. Answer our poll question as well. 522 votes in already. It's up all weekend. Which of these three Toronto sports teams do you think has... will achieve the most in the next few years? Blue Jays, Raptors, or Leafs? Blue Jays with a comfortable lead at the moment, 45.6%. But a lot of support for the Raptors at 28.4% and for the Leafs as well at 26.1%. Producer Kyle Norris joins the show now. Kyle, how did you vote in the poll?
I had to go with the Raptors personally. I just think looking at a team that who we largely expect to come back, hopefully looking pretty similar to the last couple of years, already doing so by acquiring Fred VanVleet. And we'll see about Serge Ibaka and what else they're able to do. But I just think you have to go with the team that's proven themselves already to come out on top and win. So I went with the Raptors. I think this is already another step. Today was a great move in picking up VanVleet, who I really think could be the future point guard of this team. And once Lowry's gone and he can really take the reins and... I just had to go with the Raptors to continue their success that we've seen for so many years now.
Fred VanVleet deserves an enormous amount of credit, Kyle. A lot of people have seen it. I referred to it off the top of the show today. You got to check out his video on YouTube when he had his draft party in 2016 and didn't get drafted. Imagine holding a draft party and you don't get drafted and you have to address your fans and friends that are there, and he did so eloquently. And he always said, bet on yourself, believe in yourself, good things will come. And end of the day, his contract just shows you he's one of the great stories in sports, is he not, to get himself into this position where he's now an integral part of one of the best teams in the NBA.
Yeah, it's so awesome. I saw that video circulating around today as well of him having to explain to everybody of a party that you put on to get drafted and you don't get your name called. I'm sure that had been one of the toughest things he had to do then, and just being able to get through that, and then he was able to spin it his whole career into this three-word motto of bet on yourself, and he's really proven that time and time again, all these different games, all these situations where even times when he's faltered in games or series in the playoffs, and then he comes and explodes for one big game in a crucial situation for the Raptors. I mean, it's really been the story of his career, being a guy that... he really pushes himself. He doesn't need anyone else to do it for him, even though the team he's got around him is so great. I'm sure they help him a ton as well. But yeah, now being an undrafted player to get the biggest contract ever for a player who wasn't drafted in the NBA, it's a great story, and it's so great to have him on a Toronto team. And really, he kind of embodies everything that that Toronto fans love in their sports as well. And we see it in the Leafs, and we see it in all these guys. Everybody likes the guy that can really go to work and get it done for his team, and he really embodies that. And it's great to have him continue to be on a Toronto sports team.
You already touched on it. There isn't any question. The successor to Lowry is probably where it goes long term. The deal is for 4 years, three totally guaranteed because the fourth year is a player option. But obviously, the Raptors made him a target. They want him here long term. But on the flip side, there's this year to consider. And it leads to believe, especially, you know, they're trying to get Ibaka, who's near the end, let's face it, the later stages of his career as well. And if he would come back, they'd probably take Gasol as well. But he's liable to wind up with the Lakers. But end of the day, Masai Ujiri obviously is of the belief that this team, as constructed, can roll back one more time and still be a very competitive team and still leave room for the super signings of 2021, whether that's Giannis or somebody else. So, Kyle, it's almost like the Raptors are getting their cake and eating it too here.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. I think that's a big part of it. I think they want... I think they really need another player like a Giannis or a Kawhi to really get over the mountain. We saw last season they were able to put together a great playoff run. I mean, they went seven games with Boston, and Boston was a really great team that season. So I think they have the pieces. They have the pieces that they need to put around somebody, and I think that's what they're trying to show. And they're getting all these pieces to show to players that maybe they will target, like a Giannis, in the years to come. We have the pieces that we can build around you, and you just have to come in here, do your thing, and this can be a championship team again. We'll see if they can even get it done next year, but I still feel the NBA is that league that you really need that one player to drive you forward a little bit. But I think the Raptors certainly have amazing, amazing pieces to put around a guy like that.
Blue Jays are leading in the poll, Kyle. What are your thoughts on the direction they're going in? And do you share the belief that so many people seem to be buying into that eventually this team is going to spend a pile of money on free agents this year? They're only 1 year removed from 95 lost season, but all of a sudden it's like, yeah, let's spend that big money right now. What do you think?
Yep, I think the Blue Jays are a great option here in this poll as well. I think obviously they're leading, but... yeah, they've got all this young talent, and I think the biggest factor in all of this is the fact that they were able to go to the playoffs this season. I think that means so much to a team full of young guys. I mean, we've seen it with the Leafs a few times and how they really obviously don't like losing, and we see these young guys not take it well coming off on podiums when they're eliminated in the playoffs. And I think we saw the same sort of thing from guys like Bo Bichette, who really just, you could tell they did not enjoy losing that series, and it was against probably one of the best teams in baseball in the Rays, and they still felt like that should have been their series. So I think that's a huge factor in this team really going forward. And yeah, I mean, they're all young guys. They're all going to continue to get better each and every year. And I think that's what a lot of people see in this team and see success for years to come. And it looks like there's willingness from management, whether it be this year or not, obviously this year being very difficult for the MLB, to spend money. But I think if they're willing to spend money and improve this team and really bolster these guys who are already great on their own, I think, yeah, that's a great option to pick for a team to win you championships and be contending for years to come.
Kyle Norris, our producer, is with us. The NHL is trying to decide when it starts its season. They've got some labor issues now. And, you know, Kyle, that's one of the things. I don't think there's any doubt that there are always labor issues in any sport between management, the league, and its players. That's just a fact of life of doing business. But as we saw with baseball, when they had their problems, which were eventually resolved enough to have a season, the appetite of the public for this is none during COVID. In fact, the appetite of the public towards it most of the time is minimal. But now nobody even wants to hear or talk about this. There's not much talk. It seems to have gone behind the scenes. And that's probably a good thing here because the NHL needs to get this rectified ASAP. If they want any chance of, never mind playing January 1st, playing any time in January.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, fans, we saw with the MLB is the perfect example of they don't want anything to do with hearing about millionaires and billionaires complaining about money. And we understand that it's the livelihood of players, and we understand it's the livelihood of everybody at stake. But I mean, when you get down to it, it's you're talking about large numbers here. And yeah, if I'm a player though, I feel it's a different situation than MLB in a little bit in a way, just because there's sort of a betrayal. A lot of them seem to say they feel betrayed by the whole thing, because they had a deal in place and it seems like they're trying to get it flipped on them now. So I hope that isn't going to be an issue, because if you're feeling betrayed and you're going in this sort of situation of now you want to kind of get them back on it, we'll see how that works out. But yeah, they have to rectify that if there's going to be any start. I mean, you already need, we saw this with the first restart, you need so much time in advance anyways to get going, because you need training camps and you need all sorts of things to get the season off and running. And I know they were targeting that January 1st date, but that seems as if it's not going to happen at this point, with more issues popping up. And now we have issues in Canada with the whole Canadian division that they seemed like they liked the idea of, and we'll see how that works out, considering that we have lockdowns here now. So there are a lot of issues cropping up for the NHL, and we'll see if they're able to fix them in time and get a start sooner rather than later, because we don't want to see them hold out too long.
Yes, the second restart might turn out to be more difficult than the last one, and that is saying something. Great stuff, Kyle. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Raj.
Kyle Norris, our producer, giving his thoughts. You can give your thoughts on Twitter at TheRaj590. Email roger@sportsnet590.ca. Text 590-590. We'll read them all in our final hour with you, which is coming up. And during that final hour, Marcus Fitzgerald joins us, host of Basketball Central on Sportsnet 650. NBA free agent market is heating up. Lots of moves made. Van Vliet, of course, the big one, not just here in Toronto, but in the league, but Gordon Hayward getting a pile of money to sign with the Hawks instead of Boston. How does that all shake down? And any thoughts at all that Anthony Davis goes anywhere else but the Lakers is a foregone conclusion, but a pen is not dried on the paper on that deal yet as well. We'll talk to Marcus about that. And one of our top interviews of the past week, Alan Walsh, always entertaining, the player agent, always outspoken, was on Tim and Sid. We'll hear from him as well. Sportsnet Tonight continues. I'm Roger Lajoie, Saturday Night Edition. Thanks for being with us on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
If only there was a way to engineer the human eyeball to watch 10 different screens at once. Keep your eyes and ears on every game with Sportsnet Tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
It is a pretty good time to be a Toronto sports fan these days. I'm Roger Lajoie. This is Sportsnet Tonight on the Sportsnet Radio Network. But of the Jays, the Raptors, and the Leafs, which one is the team that's going to be the most successful in the next couple of years? That's the topic of our Twitter poll. It's up all weekend at the Raj 590. Vote in, give your comment. We'll read them. You can also email roger@sportsnet590.ca. Text 590-590. One of our top interviews of the past week was player agent Alan Walsh, who was on with Tim and Sid. We will play that for you later in this hour, and we'll catch up on your text and emails. But now we're going to catch up on what's going on in a very busy time in the NBA during free agency. Marcus Fitzgerald joins us, host of Basketball Central on Sportsnet 650, to talk about it. Marcus, thanks very much for joining us. Hope you and yours are safe and well. And well, let's start. Fred VanVleet. Hey, listen, it's never as exciting when you re-sign your own player, but Marcus, the Raptors made it quite clear that their number one target in free agency was Fred VanVleet, and to re-sign him, and they got their man today. What do you think?
Well, no doubt about it, Raj, and thanks so much for having me. I hope you're well. Without question, this is a big move for the Raptors. I know that Bobby Webster had said just a few days ago that Freddie was certainly their top priority, and obviously, the relationship between Fred VanVleet and the Toronto Raptors have been beneficial for both. I mean, we all know the story. Fred's undrafted, and he doubled down basically on betting on himself. And I mean, he played for not a lot of guaranteed money a few years ago in the G League, and then he signed that two-year deal for $18 million. And even when he signed that deal, Raj, everybody was like, "Oh man, Fred VanVleet! Look at this guy! What a story!" And now we're at the point where he's getting a bag. I mean, it's $85 million over 4 years. And, you know, and I'm sure we'll get into this, credit Masai as well for making sure that, you know, the number for Freddie next year is a little bit lower to ensure that the Raptors will have just a little bit more cap space for the summer of 2021. So it's a great deal for Fred VanVleet. It's a great deal for the Raptors. And I'm sure it's a great deal for the fans in Toronto, because I know how popular Freddie is out there. So it is a great day in the six for the Raptors, for Fred, and for everybody involved.
Hard not to really understand that and agree with that without question, Marcus. It definitely is. It's obvious that the MO of the Raptors, and listen, this is no big earth-shattering thing, but, and you already touched on it in terms of leaving extra money for the summer of 2021, even though they are preparing for the 2021 season, it really is all about the next year, making the free agent move, whether it's Giannis or somebody else. And on the flip side, though, it leaves the team in a position where they're going to come back, if they could, and especially if they can get Serge Ibaka done as well, with the same team they had last year, and a chance to, again, be competitive. Is this team still going to be a team that should be expected to be a top four Eastern Conference team if there are no other additions, given the fact, Marcus, I like this team very much. I think they're more than capable of being good again, but we look at other teams in the East who have really improved themselves in the last year or two.
Yeah, and there's no doubt about that. I mean, I think the Raptors are going to be, you know, another top four or five team in the Eastern Conference. Obviously, there's some things to wait on here because, and we may get into this this evening as well, Raj, we don't know where James Harden is going to end up. Now, we know that James Harden turned down a massive extension to stay in Houston. He wants to strong-arm his way to Brooklyn. Or there's also the rumor that James Harden could be a Philadelphia 76er that would see Ben Simmons going the other way. Obviously, if either of these two moves actually happen, if they did, certainly that would affect the Raptors in their own division, much less the Eastern Conference. But getting back to Toronto, I do think they have the capabilities to be a top four, top five seed in the East based on what they've done. And you know what? We've reached a point with the Raptors too, Roger, where we just have to trust the program. I mean, in Philadelphia, they have trust the process. I think in Toronto, you just got to trust the program. I mean, Fred VanVleet is a beacon of player development for Toronto, for that organization too. Again, you know, sign a guy undrafted and to turn him into just an absolute key piece going forward, where you're going to have Fred, you're going to have Pascal Siakam, OG Anunoby, and that's when, you know, you're Bobby Webster, you're Masai Ujiri, you're going to Giannis Antetokounmpo, and you're trying to tell him, look, here's your core, these are your guys. The core is in place, and maybe it is Giannis next summer. I don't know. It could be, it might not, but some other marquee free agent might see that and go, you know what, the core is in place, I trust the program, I trust Nick Nurse, And away we go. So the Raptors have set themselves up for success, not only for this year, and I believe that. They'll be a top four or five seed in the East, no question. But they've also set themselves up for 2, 3, 4 years down the road. And that's the window of potential success you need to be a very good franchise in the NBA. That's what the Raptors are right now.
Marcus Fitzgerald with us, host of Basketball Central and Sportsnet 650. I'm Roger Lishwell. Couldn't agree more, Marcus. And further to the entire topic of player development and how the Raptors have gone about doing their business and making sure they stay, you know, competitive, even in the year where clearly they threw all the chips in for Kawhi and it worked out spectacularly well because they won the championship. I remember when the deal first came down, my first thought on it was, well, first of all, wow, they got a world premier player coming here for a year. I never really expected Kawhi was going to re-sign, but we heard he was coming. We didn't have the parameters of the deal, and I know I wasn't the only person who sat back and said, man, I just hope Siakam or OG didn't have to part in that deal, and they didn't. And I think what we're seeing now is the fruits of that victory. And of all the stuff the Raptors have done well, we go back to making that deal and then winning the championship and filling in the parts around him to do that and being able to do that and still have OG and Siakam does show you why we still feel good about this team moving forward, because they won the championship, they got their guy, and they really didn't give up the guys that they really wanted to keep.
Well, in order to win a championship and to be successful for years to come, I mean, you obviously need the talent, you need a good coaching system in place, you need to have that player development, and also you need to have a little bit of luck. I'm actually really glad you brought that trade up, because when we look back on it now, I mean, Jakob Poeltl is a nice player. Like, he's your 8th, 9th, or 10th guy. He's got some size, he can defend the rim a little bit. And DeMar DeRozan, I know how popular he was in Toronto, and rightfully so. He was there for all the tough years with Kyle Lowry, all those playoff disappointments, and he really endeared himself to that market. I have no doubt about that. But you look at that deal, man, now, and it's just like, how in the world did San Antonio not get Pascal Siakam? How in the world did they not get OG Anunoby? How in the world did they not get Norm Powell, for that matter? I mean, there's lots of things that have gone the Raptors' way. And in order to have success and to win a championship, you need things to break the right way. And those are obviously three, you know, decisions that broke the right way for the Raptors. Sometimes you just need a little bit of luck, and, you know, good thing for the Raptors and their fans that, yes, OG Anunoby is an essential part of that core going forward. Obviously, there's some things with his contract that they'll need to work out with in the coming months and you know, looking ahead to next year. But, yeah, things went well with that Kawhi deal, and now they can set the table for potentially the next decade here if there's a certain free agent in Wisconsin who decides he wants to go in another direction about a year from now.
That's the guy everybody is waiting on. There is no question, and we'll see if they can do that. Player development and how good the team is at that. The best illustration of that is Fred VanVleet. But another part of this mix to this franchise getting to where it is today, as obviously we talked about the significance of that deal and how well it worked, filling in the spare parts with the Ibakas and Gasol, being able to attract those players, bringing Nick Nurse in as coach. So many great things that have been done. But player development overall, the number of players, Marcus, that the Raptors have identified that other teams haven't, maximizing their lower draft picks over the years, and the success and the development of Raptors 905 all have to be mentioned when you look at where this team is at.
Oh, no question about it. I mean, Fred VanVleet was an NBA G League champion. So was Pascal Siakam. The one thing that I marveled at with the Raptors, Raj, this past year is that when you looked at that rotation, every time you looked at it, you said, well, holy Moses, this team has got 10 guys who can play, 10 guys who can legitimately play. And I know once the playoffs start, you're going to shorten your rotation down to 8 guys, maybe 7. But when you're in the regular season, you're trying to win games and you're trying to conserve energy without going the load management direction, you're going to need a little bit of depth. I mean, you talk about guys like Chris Boucher. There was a guy in the bubble named Paul Watson, I think, who I had never heard of until the Orlando bubble. Like, the Raptors played exceptionally well in the lead up to the postseason. And in a lot of cases, they had these guys come off the bench that you had never heard of before. And it didn't matter because they bought in, they played championship defense every night. You knew they were going to play hard. It didn't matter if Terrence Davis was out on the floor. It didn't matter if it was Rondae Hollis-Jefferson out there. They have player development. They've got the system. They've got the coaching. And if they're lucky enough to have a generational star like a Kawhi lead the way, well, then the sky's the limit. Now, you know, we talk about whether or not the Raptors are a top five seed in the Eastern Conference, which they certainly are. Are they a championship team? You know, maybe, maybe not. I think they're right there. One more guy maybe can push them over the top like Kawhi did. But, you know, if you're going to build something for sustained success, the Raptors have done that down to the letter, really. And they should be very good for years to come.
Well, and that's indeed the case. And listen, it's all about trying to win championships. But to get into that position, you've got to be at least a team that is very competitive and can attract those players. And the Raptors have done so much so well. So all good. We'll see what they can do. And we'll see if any news comes on Ibaka in the next day or two as well. So let's look around, Marcus, at the rest of the NBA and some of the moves that have been made. It's been a busy and an active time. There are still some big chips to fall, big dominoes in play here. But how about Gordon Hayward getting as much money as he did to depart from Boston? What did you think of that?
Well, that was certainly the surprise, and NBA Twitter had its fun with that. I do think if you're in a situation like the Charlotte Hornets, you're not in a big market. You're not a glamorous franchise, but, you know, with Kemba Walker long gone out the door and now picking LaMelo Ball third overall, I mean, you want to have some form of stability around him so he doesn't drown in his first couple years in the league. Now, I will say this about Gordon Hayward. Obviously, he had that terrible injury a few years back, and he's dealt with ankle problems after that. Gordon Hayward can still be a good player. He can still be an effective player. Could he turn the tide on a contender? Maybe in the right situation. But like everybody else, when I saw that number, I mean, 4 years, $120 million for Gordon Hayward. I mean, MJ, come on, man. Like, I understand that it's the Charlotte Hornets, and you're not going to get the Anthony Davises. You're not going to get the Giannis Antetokounmpos to come to Charlotte. So you're going to have to overpay a little bit to at least have a little box office marquee. And, you know, Gordon Hayward can be a good player, just not for that much money. So I don't think that Charlotte necessarily got better. It just means that if you catch Charlotte on a Tuesday night on a league pass, you can say, oh, let's see how Gordon Hayward's doing. Other than that, you probably will forget that, you know, Gordon Hayward still plays in the league. Good that he got his money, Raj, but you'll probably never see him play again because he's in Charlotte now. It's all done.
Well, that's it is true. Well, that's the unfortunate part for teams like Charlotte in the NBA. You're right. And the only way you get a player like that is to grotesquely overpaid. And as long as people understand that and can live with it and it makes them more entertaining and helps develop ball, I guess. But even at that, it just that was a mind-boggling one. For sure. The Miami Heat were the story in the Eastern Conference in the bubble, the way they played and performed and almost won the NBA title, for heaven's sakes. Dragic signs a two-year, $37.4 million deal to stay with the Heat. So where do you rank them if we're looking? Because, you know, it was all Giannis and the Bucks and the Raptors, and people talked about Philly and their stars and Boston, especially when they brought Hayward in and the Celtics. And the Heat really didn't get that kind of love. And even throughout the playoffs, Marcus, there was always somebody else that was going to be in the NBA final except the Heat in the minds of a lot of people. Lo and behold, they did it. Now they got a tough act to follow, their own. Do they have a chance of doing that?
Oh, yeah. No, I think they do, because I think that Heat culture is a real thing. It exists. I mean, I know we've heard that a lot in NBA circles. It's basically the NBA equivalent of let Russ cook in the National Football League with Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. But, I mean, Mickey Arison, Pat Riley, Eric Spoelstra, they've got an incredible program over there. And Jimmy Butler really emerged as, you know, a lead dog when a lot of people wondered if he was the guy, if he was going to be the right fit for a situation like that. But obviously, Jimmy Butler and the Miami Heat is a perfect marriage. And now you've got a situation where, you know, Pat Riley said before free agency that they wanted to do their best to run things back, and they're doing that. I mean, Goran Dragic gets a two-year deal for $37.5 million. Myers Leonard gets 20 over two. They just signed Avery Bradley today, an ex-Laker who's a decent defender still, can give you a little bit offensively, about, you know, once every six or seven games. Was not with the Lakers in the bubble, so we haven't seen Avery Bradley play in a little bit, but he's certainly a guy who can fit into that roster because they lost Jay Crowder. Of course, Jay Crowder signed with the Phoenix Suns today for 3 years and about $30 million. So, you know, the Miami program, the Miami Heat culture is a real thing. It exists. So we have, you know, no reason to not trust what's going on in that market. And again, don't forget Bam Adebayo and Jimmy Butler and Tyler Hero and Duncan Robinson. We talk about cores that are in place. Talk about the Raptors at the start of this segment, what they have to look forward to with, you know, Freddie and Pascal Siakam and OG Anunoby. Miami's in the same spot as Toronto right now when you consider who they have. And, you know, the good thing, Raj, about all the deals the Heat have signed with these players for the second years of these contracts, you know, team options and non-guaranteed. So the Heat can make decisions going into next season, and they also have flexibility, again, getting back to it, for the summer of 2021 or whenever the offseason actually is. So as well as the Raptors have set themselves up, the Miami Heat are right there too.
How about the Lakers? They win the championship and then they get the NBA Sixth Man of the Year off their rivals, the Clippers, to make them that much better moving forward. How about that one?
I was very impressed, needless to say, in terms of what Rob Pelinka and the Lakers have done. I mean, obviously they didn't have a ton of cap room to play with, but you know, they get a little creative and they move Danny Green and a first-round pick to Oklahoma City for Dennis Schroeder, an excellent secondary playmaker, which is something that the Lakers had been missing all last year. I mean, they entrusted all of it to LeBron James and they wanted to preserve his energy. And yes, I mean, there was a four-month break due to the pandemic, so that probably helped the likes of LeBron and AD, and that was part of the reason why they were able to cruise to a championship. But now you have a situation where the season starts, you know, just over a month and a half after the Lakers win a championship. It's a 72-game grind. LeBron James is 35 going into his year 36 season, year 18. So now you've got a guy in Dennis Schroeder who can, you know, run an offense for stretches. And now, potentially, you've got a second unit that's really going to eat offensively, Roger. I mean, you can have Dennis Schroeder and Montrezl Harrell run the pick and roll. and the Lakers can have a lot more production from their second unit this coming season than they did a year ago. And that's designed really to make sure that LeBron and AD are fresh for the playoffs, because when those two are fresh for the postseason, then they're going to be ready to go. Obviously, Montrezl Harrell had his shortcomings defensively in the playoffs in that second-round series against Denver. He was just eaten alive by Nikola Jokic, and that's a big reason why Denver came back from 3-1 to win that series. But, you know, Montrezl Harrell also had, you know, some family stuff going on. He lost his grandmother. He had to leave the bubble for a little while. So, you know, obviously that kind of played into it as well. Montrez is going to give the Lakers a secondary offensive option that they did not have a year ago. And despite all that, still won a championship. This is a defending champion that just got better on paper, and that should be a scary thing for the rest of the Western Conference.
Well, agreed. And I think adding Harrell is only going to help, and it hurts the Clippers a bit. And that's your, at least in the minds of a lot of people, the number one opposition you'll face again next year, even though it didn't turn out to be in the bubble because of their upset loss. But we shall see. I liked it. We're all expecting Anthony Davis to re-sign with the Lakers. It hasn't happened yet. It's just a formality, I'm trusting.
It's all framework and how they want to structure the deal, and basically making sure that Anthony Davis gets his full bag. He gets, you know, all the money that's coming to him, and why not? I think that, you know, if he didn't have that one subpar game in the finals, he very easily could have won finals MVP. And with the way that the league is going, you know, your team's playing small and not necessarily playing position basketball. It's positionless basketball now, but what makes Anthony Davis so effective is that he can erase all of that. Like, if you're the Houston Rockets and you want to go small, doesn't matter because Anthony Davis is out there. And now you've got teams trying to get bigger because of that. In a way, Anthony Davis has kind of changed the way that NBA teams are now thinking and how they want to construct their roster. Doesn't mean you have to be the Detroit Pistons, but at the same time, you need to have some size on that roster, and Anthony Davis is, you know, giving some teams some pause. But yes, he will re-sign with the Lakers, and it sounds like we should hear an announcement probably at some point during U.S. Thanksgiving on Thursday. While we're in the middle of watching football, it sounds like we could be hearing an Anthony Davis re-signing with the Lakers headline to kind of break that up a little bit. But there's no reason to think he's going to leave.
Would not be a surprise, and should happen. Finally, Marcus, you already talked about it, but let's spend a minute or two just talking about the fact that the NBA is going to start on December the 22nd. That caught a lot of people off guard, the rapidness of that. However, it does make sense when you realize that the number one goals of the league were to make sure the season finished before the Olympics so their players could play and they would not have to go up against the Olympics. So that's accomplished. They wanted to play as many regular season games as they could. So you got to start sometime late December if you're going to still play a 72-game season and finish before the Olympics. And, of course, the entire economics of it, the more games you play, the better for the television deals, and maybe later in the season you get more fans. And the final thing, of course, they want to stay on time for the 21-22 season, where hopefully not just the NBA, but the whole world gets back to normal. So I get it. And after the success of the bubble, I'm not going to criticize anything the NBA does. But Marcus, that is one quick turnaround for a lot of players. And I know a handful of teams haven't played since March, but talk about the challenges the teams that play deep in the bubble are going to have to be ready to play on December the 22nd.
Well, for sure. I mean, look, if you're the New York Knicks or the Detroit Pistons, I mean, you're raring to go. I mean, you haven't played for months at a time, but obviously if you're the Lakers, the Heat, the Denver Nuggets, the Boston Celtics, yeah, you might be, you know, fighting it a little bit. You might be searching for energy some nights. I mean, obviously, Rog, the selfish fan side of me, when I heard that news, I thought, bleep, yeah, let's go. December the 22nd. Okay, fire it up. And then I thought, wait a minute. You know, the Larry O'Brien Trophy was handed out on the 10th of October, and now we're racing back into this. But obviously, the economics play into it here. We know that if the NBA did not play its traditional Christmas Day games, it would have cost them somewhere between $500 million in revenue. So there's a big economic thing there. We all know that, and it's even gotten to the point where Adam Silver is not afraid to sort of mention that, where in years past he would be kind of hesitant to bring it up. We know that money is in play, and the players aren't dumb either, Raj. They know. They know that if they don't play at that certain point, that it's going to cost them. And yes, a big thing when the bubble was going on, it's like, okay, we can think about next year, but we also have to be thinking about 2 years down the line, because eventually you got to get back on schedule. And as uncomfortable as it may be for certain guys, a la LeBron James at 35 years old, we've just reached a point where it's like nothing is the same anymore. Everything is different. Everything is backwards. Everything is upside down. So there's going to be, you know, some frustration in trying to adjust to the new world. And this is kind of where the NBA is at, just like the rest of us, you know, but this is kind of where the NBA is at right now. And they just got to do their best and keep trucking forward. I'm still looking forward to the season. It might be a bit sloppy to start, but, you know, I'm looking forward to it December 22nd.
Well, us too. Bring it on. We need the content, Marcus. So 100%, I'm glad the NBA is playing. Marcus Fitzgerald has great content. He's the host of Basketball Central on Sportsnet 650. Joining us to talk some hoops here tonight on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Marcus, always great to have you on the show. Thanks so much. Stay well.
Appreciate it, Roger. Take care.
Thank you. Marcus Fitzgerald joining us from Sportsnet 650. No doubt it's a fast turnaround, but I said it after the bubble. I cannot criticize the NBA and the way they've done business. They did a marvelous job pulling that off. It was an it was just a total success. So full credit to everybody involved. And yeah, it seems a bit early, but they're full speed ahead on December the 22nd. Okay, well, that's the NBA. The NHL says it wants to play January the 1st. It's November the 21st. And they have a ton of work to do. And just like I did with the NBA, I'm not going to criticize the NHL because they did a great job with their hub cities too. But rising COVID numbers in Canada make it less and less likely there are going to be any fans that are going to be able to be at NHL games. Does that change the way the NHL looks at its season? How do they pull this off? And is there really going to be some problems between the players and the owners moving forward? It sure sounds like that. John Hovind will join us, host of SiriusXM, NHL, and the Kings of the Podcast, to talk about that in moments. I'm Roger Lajoie, Sportsnet tonight on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Sportsnet tonight, Sportsnet Radio Network. Roger Lajoie with you till the top of the hour. CBS Sports Radio coming up overnight. Our great lineup of shows, including the Fantasy Show, Inside the Lines, Josh Goldberg, afternoon edition of Sportsnet Today. I'll join you for Sportsnet tonight, 4 to 8 p.m. Eastern tomorrow. Reach me on Twitter at TheRog590. Email Roger at Sportsnet590.ca. Text 590-590. Name and location. We'll read. Catch up on all the text emails coming up at the top of the hour. We talked NBA, and their season is starting December 22nd. It's a quick start. They've got a lot of work to do. It'll be a challenge, but their plans are in place, and they are all ready to go. So where does that leave the NHL? Well, the NHL news is not nearly as clear and definitive. To talk about that and other NHL offseason news, John Hovind joins us, host of SiriusXM, and he's also got the Kings of the Podcast. John, great to have you on the show as always. Thanks for being with us. And let's start with the fact, John, have we got a labor problem really brewing here in the NHL, or is this something that's going to quickly get pushed under the rug and so life can return to normal here in the NHL and they can get going as ASAP?
Well, first off, Raj, thanks for having me. Always good to talk to you. I haven't chatted with you since the playoffs over the summer, which sounds weird enough in and of itself. But to your questions, yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I think that it will be cleared up rather quickly. I don't think this is going to be something that's going to drag on. Both sides recognize that they need to get after it and they need to reach some conclusions soon. However, there is a labor issue here. This is, you know, the players came to the table quietly and you know, we're willing to do a new CBA and do an extension in order to get the return to play going and get everything ironed out earlier this year. And now the NHL management, you know, owners and whatnot are back with hat in hand asking for some further concessions. So the one good thing, though, really would be the fact that they're looking at deferred salaries more than asking the players to take a haircut. So as people here in the States know, that was a real bone of contention for Major League Baseball players. You know, they did not want to take any sort of prorated salary. So if we can get this thing ironed out and maybe defer some of this money until the out years, new TV contract kicks in, revenue picks back up, that would be certainly helpful to the owners. So looking for something to get handled here rather quickly.
everyone feels that way and is hopeful without question. And we shall see. Lots of work to do over the weekend, but I suspect they will get it straightened out. But, John, here we sit. It is November the 21st. They are still kind of, you know, hoping for January the 1st. Are we already kind of past the point of no return on that? Or is it just a case that, look, if they can wrap this up in another week, as long as they do it before the end of November, I suppose they could start January 1st. But, my goodness, there are a lot of moving parts to start a season.
Yeah, I think January 1st is probably, you know, off the table at this particular moment. I mean, they can talk as optimistically as they want to publicly, but, you know, this is a league that has players spread all across the world. So in order to get some of the travel issues behind them and the quarantine that will be necessary, regardless of what's happening with the Canadian border, specifically just to all the different markets and for training camp to open up, you're going to need at least a three-week notice. That if those teams are then going to want to have a two-week training camp at a minimum, plus you have the extra week that the seven teams that didn't participate in the playoffs that they've been, you know, promised, and add to that a Christmas break. People will want to be home with their families and whatnot, spend some time away from the rink. So, you know, you figure the league's going to be shut down there for at least 3 or 4 days. I think January 1st is a little aggressive at this particular moment, unless they were to announce something here in the next 24 to 48 hours. But you know what? That's perfectly fine with me. We have the World Junior Championships coming up, which is by far the greatest tournament in all of hockey and an opportunity for everybody to watch the next wave of NHL stars. So I've been lobbying now for a couple of weeks. I think Bettman might have blocked my text messages. I've been lobbying to start the NHL up on January 10th. Let the world of hockey focus on one thing through the end of, January 5th or 6th there. Focus on the World Juniors, which is really just such a great tournament, and all hockey fans in every market should be paying attention to.
I'll agree with that. I'm a big fan of the tournament. But another factor, I guess, too, though, John, is you try to find out what the game overall game plan is for the NHL. And the two leagues operate separately. However, there's no question the seasons kind of run hand in hand. So the NBA decides to go December the 22nd and make sure the thing is finished by, I believe, July 25th. Something like that is the last proposed day of the NBA final. And the rationale is simple. And bear with me for a second if I quickly just run down the whys. They want to play as many regular season games as possible. Okay, well, you better start quick. You want to finish before the Olympics start for TV and your players' right, but mostly for TV. You can't go up against the Olympics on television as a product like you did last summer when nobody was watching anything else. Okay, makes sense. Mm-hmm. You also look at they expect that by then some fans in the United States may get back, so it won't be a full season with no fans in the stands in south of the border. So there's more reasons, but I won't go into them all, but it does make sense. There's a logic to it. But when I look at the NHL, and then as soon as the NBA says that, they immediately go from, you know, people are talking maybe February back to January the 1st. It leads me to believe as to why. Because, John, one of the things in particular with the NHL is this is such a gate-driven league, as we know. And the number of fans that are going to be available or allowed, I should say not available, allowed to go into NHL games January to, well, who knows how long, but certainly not by January the 1st. So what is their rush? I know they also want to finish before the Olympics for TV product, but is the NHL not more inclined to do a 48 to 56 game season and not be as concerned about starting quickly? And the later you start, doesn't that open the door for more games in front of paid spectators?
Well, you were on the right track up until the very last point. No, the later that you open does not really allow for more fans to be in the building. But the main difference between the NHL and the NBA is that they are a gate-driven league, like you talked about. So from an NHL perspective, I don't think they're really, to be honest, I don't think they're in any particular hurry to get the league started as quickly as possible. I think that, you know, back of the napkin, here's how you draw this thing up. You say you need to be finished by about July 15th because of the Olympics, as you mentioned. So then you just work backwards from there. They need a minimum, I think it's 48, it might be 50 at the most. You need a minimum of 48 to 50 games to be played in the regular season in order to fulfill the TV contract, which they desperately want to get out from underneath so that they can then start the new TV contract, which, of course, they believe is going to drive additional revenue. We've seen sports rights fees go up significantly, whether you're talking about UFC or any of the other sports. over the last couple of years. So the NHL is really hoping to cash in on that as well. And in order to do that, they need to fulfill this TV contract, which is why it's absurd if anybody thinks, well, maybe they're just going to cancel the season and start over again in 21-22. Oh, no, they're not. They are determined to find a way to get this season underway. So don't get too caught up in any of that sort of stuff. So, again, you go with July 15th, then you work your way backwards. What's the latest they can start in order to get 48 to 50 games in? And, yes, the later they start, the better off it would be for them, because that would be fewer empty arena games. And then maybe hopefully you're getting into that time period in the playoffs where potentially some fans could be in the building, whether it's at, you know, 20 or 40 or even 50% reduced capacity by that point. So, yeah, I don't particularly think that the NHL is as much in a hurry to get going as the NBA was. And then I also just think that you add a layer of complexity in the NHL, because for the NBA, there's one international team, one team in Toronto. They've already relocated it to Florida temporarily. But when you're talking about the NHL, you're talking about, more than just one team. So you're potentially talking about, with the border issues in quarantine, you're potentially talking about an entire division being in Canada. And then what do? Do you divide the season in half? So you only announce the schedule for the first half of the season, hoping that border crossings would be allowed? Or do you go ahead and just go full boat and say, look, we're going to play 48 games, and this is the new division alignment for this particular season, and it's going to be a Canadian-only division for the entire year in the regular season? I think there are a lot of questions beyond just the deferment of salaries that have to be answered here over the next, coming days, coming week, whatever it's going to be, in order for this thing to clear itself up.
Oh, there's lots of questions. You're so right about that. John Hoven is with us from SiriusXM. I'm Roger Lajoie. As we talk about the NHL and the challenges they have ahead to get their season going, I would think, John, and then again, we'll see how it shakes down. I don't know why the NHL just wouldn't start the day after the Super Bowl. And you can eliminate your competition with the NFL. You can play more weekend games. The season's going to be shorter, and off you go. We'll see if they can do it. But another wrinkle, another fly in the ointment that has come up, whether it's January 1st or whenever this league starts, is the rising number of cases here in Canada. And I know in the United States, you know, where you are, it has been just terrible, the number of cases. But the biggest city in this country, Toronto, starting on Monday, goes into a lockdown for 28 days. So, you know, the kind of easy solution of a made in Canada result seemed to be another reason to get going right away, combined with the fact that despite the higher numbers in the United States, a lot of state governments in the United States are still allowing people into the stands. Do you think that's another thing that might enter into this and affect the length of time, whether or not we're going to see an opening of the border? Because cases rising in Canada certainly complicate that even more.
Yeah, look, winter certainly doesn't just end when the calendar flips over on January 1st, but there is a harsh part of winter in many, many cities that, you know, once you get into January, now things are starting to warm up a little bit. So to your point, as many of those games as you can delay starting until late January, early February, just a couple of weeks that you buy yourself there really does go a long way to get past this what everybody is hoping is kind of a hot period right now. And I think the other thing that, you know, really you have to give Gary Bettman and his staff a lot of credit for is that they have multiple plans in place, and that they're able to pull things off, that things that we don't know, that aren't made public, but they're talking about and they're planning, and they're able to pull them off on rather short notice. And I just think about the return to play. Los Angeles was about to become a bubble city. Las Vegas was about to become a bubble city. Both of those two markets had done a tremendous amount of work in order to prepare for that. You don't just pull something like that off in a couple of days or a week. There's a lot of planning that goes into it, and they did a lot of work behind the scenes. And I'd like to believe that right now there's a lot of work going on behind the scenes to come up with multiple, you know, plans. When they do return to play, whether it's January 1st or February 1st or whenever it is, when the NHL comes back, are they going to go into modified bubbles? Are they going to go into division bubbles for 10 games to get things started? They've also talked about where they would play in a hybrid system where the schedule would allow them to play for a couple weeks, then have a week off. So there's a lot of different options, I think, that are on the table right now. And again, there's more to work out than just the deferred salaries. But again, I think the framework is already there, as we've talked about. You start sometime in 2021, you play a shortened season, somewhere in the neighborhood of about 50 games, and then you wrap the whole thing up by July 15th. And then, you know, by then, hopefully we'll be able to have a somewhat normal off season And then we can return everything to, you know, normal beginning in the fall of 2021 and get back on a regular calendar year where 82 games is the norm again.
Yeah, that's indeed the hope for everything, not just the NHL, but for everything. So let's hope that's the case. John Hovind is with us from SiriusXM NHL. I'm Roger Lajoie. So, John, we got a couple of minutes. How about the off season that is going upon us here in the NHL? It figures to be relatively short. There are still a lot of players out there, and a lot of it, of course, has to do with the economic uncertainty. Do you think once this is resolved, we have a starting date and things are a bit more definitive, will lead to a few more signings? Or is this going to be a case of there are going to be a lot of players scrambling here looking for jobs? Because one thing that is certain is there will be uncertainty on the economic front.
Well, I think it's going to be a little bit of a mixture of both, and it's going to depend upon which market you're in. First of all, what the NHL does has a trickle-down effect on other leagues. So what's going to happen with the American Hockey League? We know they've tentatively penciled in starting on February 5th, but winter training camp's going to begin. They can't really start before the NHL. They typically come after the NHL. And then you also have to talk about, what about the roster sizes? You know, we saw with Major League Baseball, there was an expansion of roster sizes. And I think potentially there's going to be something similar to that in the National Hockey League, primarily because the OHL is driving a lot of that. So, you know, with the Q already returning and with the Dub having plans to return, but with the OHL and all of their crazy nonsense, there's a possibility that you could see the NHL decide to expand some rosters, also because you're playing a compacted schedule and, you know, injuries could play a factor and, you know, fatigue and things like that. So once you start to then figure out, okay, the rosters are going to be expanded by what's the number? Is it two? Is it four? Is it five? Whatever that number is, it's going to vary by market, because for some teams, they're going to be calling up players that they planned on stashing in the American League this season and probably carrying them on an NHL roster, or players that they planned on returning to junior that they're going to now potentially be carrying on the NHL roster if they get some sort of an exemption, you know, to be able to extend the roster sizes. And so I think once that dust settles, then you'll see some of those fringe bubble players, you know, start to get signed to contracts. And we could see guys that normally wouldn't expect to be in the American League, you know, veteran players that have, you know, 400 to 600 games played, let's say. You could see some of those guys start the year in the American League, and they have to find a way to get onto the NHL rosters, you know, due to injury or, you know, trades or other reasons. So I think there's just going to be a lot more roster movement in general, and to borrow your word, a lot more uncertainty than we've ever seen before. And we haven't even yet talked about, you know, the restrictions from a salary cap perspective that some teams have internal, you know, budgets, let alone what the cap restrictions are.
Well, that's the thing, John. And I guess, you know, a final comment from you on that situation, because I still take a look at it and people are still kind of fixated with such and such team still has all this money before the cap. I think the number of teams that are going to the top of the cap in the NHL will be the lowest ever. There are going to be a lot of teams that are just saying, not this year, not at this time. And that makes trying to figure out where players are going to go even that more difficulty. You just mentioned it in terms of the quiet team cap that nobody knows about. I'm just suggesting a lot of teams are going to have a cap like that.
Yeah, for sure. I know. I completely agree with you. And so you're going to see a lot of minimum salary type players on NHL rosters in order to keep their budget number, you know, low. And whether that means they're going to promote players from their American League teams that are already on those low contracts, or whether you're going to see guys that normally would cash in on a 1 or 2 year deal with an AAV of, you know, maybe around $2 million, you're going to see guys taking much lower deals. We've already seen some of that happening already, and I know that there are plenty of players out there that are still sitting on the sidelines and waiting for, you know, not only for the phone to ring, but really for a contract to be put in front of them. So I think you're going to see a lot more players on low-end deals this year than we ever have before, and short-term deals as well. It could either be a 1 or a 2 year deal, really for not a lot of money, just because there's not a lot of money in the marketplace at this particular time. Again, back to what we talked about earlier with the NHL being such a gate-driven league, and they're just, you know, the gate receipts aren't there right now.
They aren't. Uncertain times, but we'll see. And I suspect in the next, 48 hours to 72 hours, we'll get more definitive news on which way the NHL is going to go vis-a-vis its schedule and when it starts. Exciting times indeed. John Hovind's great work is at SiriusXM NHL, also on Kings of the Podcast. Joins us on a regular basis here on Sportsnet Tonight, which we always appreciate. John, thank you so much.
All right, Raj. Have a great evening. Talk to you soon.
You too, sir. Thank you. John Hovind joining us from SiriusXM. I do not envy the National Hockey League at all. I really don't. The challenge will be enormous, as it is for the NBA, all these leagues. And again, I'm repeating myself a bit. I've said it before, though. I will not doubt them because of the great work they did with the hubs and the bubbles. But that does not mitigate the fact that how this challenge is even so much more difficult, especially for the NHL. I know they have to reach a certain number of games to fulfill their television obligations, but the NHL is not financially viable with no fans in the stands for a good chunk of their teams, even with that provision of TV money. The gate is that important to that league compared to the NBA, the NHL, the NBA, the NFL, and MLB. None of the leagues like playing with no fans, but the NHL is the one least capable of doing that with some degree of economic success. So what's the rush? And hence the need to have to open up that agreement and open up a potential can of worms with the players. We'll see what happens. Be an interesting week for sure. You can weigh in because, yeah, I've got time to read a few more tweets at the Rog 590. Email roger at sportsnet590.ca and text 590-590. We'll hear what you think in minutes as Sportsnet Tonight continues. I'm Roger Lajoie on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Sportsnet Tonight on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Roger Lajoie here for a few more minutes. Coming up shortly is CBS Sports Radio. Keep you entertained overnight. They're great content. And we will also hear from our usual lineup of shows on Sunday. Fantasy show in the morning. Great stuff there. Inside the Lines with the boys. Josh Goldberg has the afternoon edition of Sportsnet today. And I'll be back between 4 and 8 p.m. tomorrow with the evening edition of Sportsnet Tonight. Great to hear from you all. Your feedback throughout the course of the show. Got to most of them. Those we didn't get to, I apologize, and we will catch up with you again tomorrow. A few minutes, though, to finalize the pool of the today's poll for you. But it's not finalized because it's up all weekend. So if you haven't weighed in or given your opinion yet, please do, because it'll be up until the end of my show here tomorrow. And the question is, which of these Toronto sports teams, and I only put three up for the purposes of this pool, will achieve the most in the next few years? All of them are in pretty good shape. In fact, you could make the argument there's never been a better time for Toronto's major sports teams collectively than there is going on right now. The Jays have a great young talent nucleus. They made it into baseball's postseason. The Raptors, 1 year removed from an NBA championship, have a stellar lineup. And the Maple Leafs, despite the playoff success, have a great core. But which one do you think is going to be the most successful in the next couple of years? Poll will continue until the show ends tomorrow. So far, it's 45.7% saying Blue Jays, 28.8% saying Raptors, 25.5% saying Maple Leafs. 573 votes so far. Much appreciated. And some good comments on them. Dave always tweets in, it's time, hashtag go Leafs. He thinks the Leafs are the team that are going to be there. We shall see. They certainly have the nucleus and the talent. Adrian says, you forgot TFC. Adrian, thank you. Didn't forget TFC. As I mentioned earlier, I'm going with these teams because they are the three major teams. TFC, the Argos, the Rock. I was going to say the Wolfpack. Unfortunately, what a terrible situation they've had there. There are a lot of other great sports teams in Toronto, but the poll has got those three. So pick one, give us your views, and love to hear from you. You can also reach us on email, as I said, roger at sportsnet590.ca or text at 590-590. Chris in Oshawa has got an interesting text. Says that the Jays, as long as they bring back their scouting guru, Atkins, who found five-tool Fisher, that approach to be tracking lazy fly balls as if they're incoming hand grenades is fantastic. Rourke is set to make a cool $12 million too. Wasn't Joey McLaughlin available? Keep making it fun, Raj. Chris in Ottawa. Chris, thank you. Well, and listen, you keep it fun too. I get the point of your text. Sports is fun. The comments are fun. And thank you for it. Pete in Toronto wonders where the Bucks are going to move when they let Giannis go for nothing. Pete, thank you. If you hear the Bucks, and I know, especially the signing today of Fred VanVleet, the VanVleet signing probably showed us more than any other time that the Raptors are, and we knew this beforehand, but now we really know, are really gearing up for 21-22, that free agent season, and even getting Fred signed, one of the key factors, and Michael Grange spotted right away, the salary is less in year two, giving him more cap flexibility for that free agent period. So it is all about them. But the only thing I'll say to that is the Bucks are certainly, at least on the surface, and it's more than on the surface, doing everything in their power to keep Giannis. And he does like Milwaukee a lot. Doesn't mean he's not going to leave, and boy, would he look great in Toronto. So, Pete, we'll see. We'll see if he does. And the Bucks know the same problem. Their franchise is at stake keeping him there. So they're going to try to do everything they can. We'll see if they can get it done. Thanks for all of your texts, your tweets, and your comments. Thanks to Tom Young, our technical director behind the glass. Great job, Tom, as always. Kyle Norris, our producer. Great job, as always, Kyle. I'll talk to you guys again tomorrow between 4 and 8 o'clock. Have a great Saturday night, and I'll talk to you again Sunday, everybody. Stay safe and well from all of us. Thanks for listening to Sportsnet tonight on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Roger Lejoie.
It's done! See you later!
Roger Lejoie.
I like that. I like that a lot.
Good night, everybody.